For July the 25th, 2014, we talk about Evo, the search for fights, One Finger Death Punch, and we ask you what should get the Telltale treatment next. Welcome to the 69th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, there's so much happening that I don't even know what to call out first in this usual, like, random section at the beginning. Gotta
all
hit the word
once.
Random. new audio interface wire. What? Okay, let's unpack that. Cool. So if you're listening to these dulcet tones, a new audio interface. No more hiss, hopefully. We'll see what it sounds like at the end. But this is with Patreon money. Bought a Focusrite Sapphire Pro 40, which allows us to do all kinds of neat things, including, you know, make the shows sound better. So this is the inaugural voyage of that particular piece of equipment. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. Perhaps more exciting, longtime listeners will recognize that Ben has been trying to get me to watch The Wire for years and years now. Dennis is in here.
Happening?
Yeah.
It has begun.
It begins. Yeah. So I was sick this past week and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to watch The Wire. And it took. So I went from being the kind of person who hadn't seen The Wire in this day at this late date, all the way to becoming the person who watched it way too late and wants to talk about it.
We can gush about it after the episode.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Good. So are you also getting through Knights of the Old Republic?
See, yeah, that's going to be the next one, because I've got to do Coder 1 and Coder 2.
Then I'm going to owe all these promises to Cole now.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Over the years, like, I've asked you to, I've requested or suggested that you do a thing, consume a piece of media, and your rejoinder, rightfully so, because you're just trying to help me, is, oh, I'll do that after you watch The Wire. And for whatever reason, like, I bounced off the first episode of it about 6 or 7 times until I was bedridden with a rowdy sinus infection. Yeah. But I've motored through the first 2 seasons, and
nice.
I said "and" too many times. Go ahead, Dennis.
I think it's a truism that everyone needs one good friend who will, you know, let you rant and rave to them about, you know, 3-year-old shows.
Yeah,
like that's the mark of true friendship. Is like, hey, yeah, let's beef about The Wire or you know, all that stuff.
Well, this is a thing. Like, if you really like something, like, okay, so I really liked, you know, Mass Effect 2, right? Something like that. It was joyous to me when everybody else kind of started playing it a little while afterward, because each new person who jumps on this thing, you know, at your request or et cetera, on down the line, it's like reliving it through them. Because, like, how often have you wished, I really just would like to be able to experience that for the first time again? Like, mm-hmm. that, I feel that as a way. Like, if, you know, one of you started watching Breaking Bad, I'd be all like, yo, Breaking Bad, like, let's rap about that. Maybe not, like, in public on a show, but just in person, you know, you just want to, mm-hmm. you want to get those sweet, sweet, heady first exposure vapors.
Also, so, the small world, I actually did watch another episode of Breaking Bad this week. It's my first in a while, and I've just had other things to do, but it's as good as always, so.
Cool. Media, you guys. we've got our own media to create. So congratulations, Ben, and thank you. In your years of cajoling me to do this thing, it took Amazon adding it to Instant Watch for me to go for it.
Get it done.
Yeah.
One thought before we move on, I think, being that this is a podcast about video games, mm-hmm. that, you know, that joy of like, oh, hey, I'm going to experience it kind of vicariously through someone else for the first time, mm-hmm. Again, is kind of unique in video games, in that you can have a Mass Effect 2 where someone's playthrough can be significantly different than yours. Mm-hmm. And so it's like all the more fun, because, you know, I, let's be honest, I'm not going to go play through Dragon Age Origins again. I'm not going to go play through Mass Effect 2 again. I'm, you know, the majority of the games that have like the infinite replay value for so many branching storylines, mm-hmm. I'm going to play through once, maybe 1.5 times, and then, you know, go on to something else. So yeah. To get someone else to play it is to say like, hey, I want to see more of the content.
Yeah.
Third hand.
However, I will judge you for your moral choices.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I think that's a lot of the legs that, you know, The Walking Dead has, you know, to a certain extent, which is like you replay it over and over again by hearing somebody else's. I just made your same point over again, Dennis. But
no,
but
yeah. it's a supporting example, and there is a bonus level for that. Go find it.
Yeah, there is, and there's going to be one for season two. Good.
Is you can call someone a monster for their choices in The Walking Dead versus other games.
That is true. Oh, which
I'm not
one
referencing
is
you necessarily on that, Cole.
I've made some objectionable choices in those games, but you know, again, go listen to that bonus level.
Yeah.
I don't know, and that's, you know, it's that also holds true if you're listening to somebody else talk about a game on a show, which we sometimes do here on The Level. We're gonna have the regular kind of schedule for this. We've got some brief news. Then we're going to do the multiplayer, speaking of Telltale, about which properties should get the Telltale treatment. And then we're going to round out by talking about the things we have been playing. Does anybody want to give a preview on their grind to keep people hooked?
Is more of the same a good preview? I feel like more of the same is not a good preview.
No, I think that discourages people. However, I also have more of the same, so...
I'm actually playing a game that was gifted by a viewer.
Ooh, which nice. Which game and which viewer?
That's actually, which viewer was it? That's awful. It was gifted to me through Dennis, in my defense.
Yeah, One Finger Death Punch, and I believe that was Richard Luttrell.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, okay, cool. So my gambit was not a horrible disaster on that. Yeah, let's jump right into it.
The brief.
Okay. Oh man, I forget what filters I ran over that, and I think I lost the file. So those are that way forever.
That is forever.
That is forever. I think it was a bit crush, like a 4-bit bit crush on it. Oh well. Anyway, this is the brief where we talk about things that are happening in this world around us. Does anybody have a story they want to throw in first?
I do.
Do it.
So I need a reminder. Did I talk about Evo at all?
We mentioned it briefly back then. However,
no.
We recorded. So like we recorded it weird, where it, like you went and saw the setup, but you didn't actually see any competition.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So my brief ties in with that. So I'll just talk about both. So my brief is that somebody made, and by somebody I mean McLeod. I don't know if that's how you pronounce
McLeod.
It or not, but McLeod. I don't think it's McLeod. It's McLeod.
Yeah, that's McLeod.
No, wait. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Anyway, McLeod Gaming made a low res version of Smash Brothers that you can play on Flash, I believe.
Really?
So it's online. Yeah, so you can play this online, and it has all the characters and then some of Smash Brothers. It seems like they emulate the up until the Brawl version, because they have like Mega Man, they have Pikachu, they have a couple other characters. Well, they have a lot of characters, but yeah, it's more than just like the GameCube version. But yeah, so there's a link to check it out if you're a fan of the series. But it was also kind of timely because I just went to the Evo convention 2 weeks ago and saw the Smash Brothers tournament. So it was the top 8 competitors playing.
Nice.
So that was a lot of fun, and seeing pretty excellent or pro gamers play a game that they've practiced for so long. But they played the Melee version, so that was also cool to see too, since that game has lasted so long.
Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
Yeah. So
yeah,
Dennis, I knew. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at this, and it looks like they've also, in addition to the normal cast, I'm seeing the kid from Kingdom Hearts, Black Mage, and Ichigo. It looks like they've had a lot of new characters.
To Smash Brothers?
Yes.
Yep.
At least one of those characters was not a video game character.
For the Wii U
one? No, I'm talking this
Flash version. Okay, sorry. Whew, okay. Yeah, I was not following you there. Who's Ichigo? I don't.
From Bleach.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple different things happening here on the demake on this Flash version of that. Are that like does each character play differently? Like, did they bring in the movesets, or is it?
I have not played it long enough. I only played one match as Mega Man, and I have not played as Mega Man before, so I don't know if it was the same moveset or not. Okay. But it looks like they're very similar.
But the things I'm saying, it's looking like at least the new characters have unique movesets.
Oh, that's
so
really cool.
It's not just like a what they call it, you know, just like a costume swap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, looking at the trailer, Martha and like DK have the similar moveset. Same thing with like Link. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, give me some highlights on the competition. Like, was Smash Brothers the only game that you saw in competition?
Yeah, so the Smash tournament that I saw was about 3 hours long, so I kind of was fizzled out after that. I watched the rest of it from home, which seemed kind of odd to do that. But they also had the final day. They also had a Street Fighter competition. They had a Marvel versus Capcom competition, so I watched some of that from home. But
yeah.
One of the coolest part about it though was just the crowd. As far as like watching Smash Brothers, because it's, you know, a pretty intelligent audience as far as they know what to look for, and they know when somebody pulled off something really awesome. And so I think the highlight of the particular tournament we saw is there's one guy who played as Pikachu, which is normally considered like a mid-range character, like not necessarily a top-tier character, but he made it to the top eight, so he was obviously doing well. And one match, the term we call it is rimmed a guy, which means what that means is that they kill the other person without losing a single life.
Okay.
And so that's a rarity, especially at that level. And so, and when we do it, we usually do 3 life stock, but, in the tournament they do it with 4 life stock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even more rare. Yeah. So he did this to a character who was playing as Fox. And so that was like huge. So everybody, you know, got out of their seats for the last kill of that. So
nice. Hey,
it's pretty intense.
Can you do me a favor and give me an etymology for rimmed a guy that is not disturbing or upsetting?
I can't, because the point of the expression is if you get rimmed, that means you have to give the other guy rim. That's the, obviously you're not going to do that. That was the origin of the expression, because the game came out when we were in high school.
So. Okay, cool.
That's
fine. I'm fine. I'm okay. Yeah. So just like I have no idea what the tenor of these crowds is. Were there people rooting for one person or team or character over another, or was it just pure love for the competition?
Yeah, so that was one of the weird things, is like these people are like celebrities, you know, like they're there's like defined like rivalries. There's defined each player at this level is a part of a clan. So like there's kind of like branding as far as what clan they're in and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy who's won the past at least 2 years in a row, perhaps more, is named Mango. And so he's like a crowd favorite since he always wins, I guess. So a lot of people cheer for Mango and stuff. But then the other guy who was like in second place essentially plays as Jigglypuff. And which is great because so for those who haven't played Smash, Jigglypuff has this one move where she goes to sleep, but if you pull off this move when you're touching the other player, it's like a home run bat, and it's almost like an instant kill depending upon what their percentage is. And so this guy was trying to utilize that move, and like Jigglypuff against Fox, and so it was like, it was very dramatic, but like he would be like 3 lives down and then come back just by like deftly using that move over and over again. So that was pretty exciting,
chicken, right?
What do you mean?
Well, at least from what I remember from it, that move, you know, you have to be right on them, but at the same time, at that point, you know, Jigglypuff's a very light character, so it can be knocked away real quick. So it's, you know, you have kind of a game of chicken where, you know, can you get close enough to them without them being able to pull off an attack? You know, kind of that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is if you miss, they have free hits on you.
Yeah.
Right,
and so
exactly.
That they can do a lot of damage in that time, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, yeah. It was really cool, though. It was like just this total underground culture that you don't typically see all congregated to one place. So.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's fucking nuts. I think that Evo and the International happened on either the same weekend or like concurrently, one weekend then the next.
Mm-hmm.
The International being the Dota, the Dota 2 competition, which they handed out like $5.5 million to the winning team, something like that.
Whoa!
Yeah,
like it's nuts. That's just weird that they happened so close to each other. Esports, man. I feel remiss, but it's just not anything that I don't know.
Hey, you know, they need to lose. Well, hey, I was about to say they need to lose like the stupid names for everyone, and like, you know, I think it can grow up in many, many ways, but I don't know. Maybe the names are part of the charm. I think that'll be my stance rather than picking specifically on crazy names for everyone, is that it's got a ton of growing up to do, but I don't think there's anything inherent about the concept of esports that makes it gross or, you know, not viable.
Yeah.
I feel like the concept that it's a sport is questionable, but that's a whole nother issue. But.
Well, yeah, sure.
I mean,
but you put an E in front of it, lowercase e, and it makes it, you know, transforms the word.
Yeah. I mean, isn't the definition of a sport anything somebody will pay to see?
I would say so, but that's...
I watched a lot of sports in early high school.
I didn't get that joke at all, Dennis.
By that definition, porn is the sport.
I mean, it's a kind of wrestling.
I know. I would contest it's not a sport, but that's not really the point. It can, even if it's not a sport, that doesn't mean it's not valid.
Yeah, yeah.
That redefines the term rear naked choke, by the way.
I know. Like, in terms of like the stupid names and stuff, though, like, isn't that some of like, you know, like, was it roller derby? I mean, don't they do all that? And I feel like a fairly light, you know, popular sport. I mean, it's a little, it's not exactly real mainstream, but
I thought up the perfect, the perfect roller derby name for a lady, except then I found out that it was, there were at least 7 different, like shitty punk bands that were named that, specifically Tawdry Hepburn.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's, gone to see, the Black Sheep, which is Cincinnati's roller derby team, but it is a really good time.
It's like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, and it's so cheap. It's a great atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I was amazed because the first time I went, I had my mind that it was like this podunk little thing, and I was just going because we worked out with some of the girls on the team, and we're getting close to the Cincinnati Gardens where they play, and there's this huge traffic jam, and I'm like, oh, some fool got in a wreck right, you know, where we're trying to go, and so it's gonna be 15 minutes before I can get in, and then I realized that it's not a wreck, it's people trying to get into the parking lot, and there's like a crowd of thousands to watch this. Like, you say it's kind of, you know, it's not mainstream, but I was blown away by the size of the crowd. So,
nice.
And I mean, what, they just built that esports stadium that can house hundreds of thousands of people or whatever.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands, probably. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Were there any lady competitors, Ben?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Moving on.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
That's one hurdle that needs to be overcome still.
Yeah, what was it?
What was it? Did you see the news story when what was it, like the Finnish tournament that straight up wouldn't allow women?
Oh yeah,
Finland's Hearthstone tournament. Yeah, fuck those guys.
Ugh. Yeah, that seems kind of silly.
I thought Finland, like, I thought they had their shit on point, but I guess not.
They're Finland.
No,
their main export is wood, which is
wood and darkness.
Yeah, really. They're apparently goth rock. Go figure.
Yeah, burning down a church.
Wood and darkness.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah. So thank you for telling us about Evo, Ben. Or did, so yeah, you had a good cool. time overall?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. I think, you know, I think with esports, they're only, I think the level at which you appreciate them is dictated by how often you or how much you've played that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're not going to pick up on the subtleties of it unless you've, you know, gone through that before.
Yes. So, so if I was in that room, I would just be cheering when everybody else cheered. Like, here's how it would go. Somebody would go, oh, I'd be, oh. A couple seconds later, like, Cole, why are you like rooting for everybody? I'm just here for the purity of the competition. I'm just happy like they're having fun.
One counterpoint to that game is Marvel versus Capcom, because everyone likes it when Deadpool beats someone to death with his own health bar.
Ooh.
Meta.
I didn't know that it was a thing.
That's like I guess I suck at all fighting games, so I'm probably like butchering this, but like that's, I guess, Deadpool's kind of a, the game's equivalent of his like final smash, is he reaches up, grabs his own health bar, and starts beating the other guy with it.
Does it have different reach depending on how much health he has left?
I'm not sure, although I really hope so.
Yeah. I mean, just like it would hold to his character if he did more damage when his health bar was bigger, you know? When it was more full, just like, oh, this actually rewards you for just doing a straight up beat down on this guy. But I could see them for purity making it so it did all the same damage the whole time. Oh,
yeah,
neat.
Got nothing.
Yeah, Ben. Sorry, Ben. You just did that thing. I'm gonna cut
second
it out.
Story. Go.
keep one in the back. Always one in the back pocket. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I've got a story about Microsoft sales for the Xbox One.
Selling off all their Aeron chairs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, so I mean, first off, you know, it sucks that this is causing them to have to downsize. It seems like, you know, parts of the business are really in trouble, and
yeah.
You know, that's never a fun thing. My interest in this story was more from the claims side. So, you know, I work in marketing, and that's largely ruined, commercials for me in that, you know, anytime I hear someone be like, oh, it's X better than this, or, you know, three times X, Y, Z, all I do is analyze it to see how they're manipulating data to get there.
High five, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. But really you don't even have to be inside the industry to see what's going on with Microsoft. They announced proudly that sales had doubled in June. When they released the Kinectless Xbox One, and you know, the first reaction is like, oh wow, it doubled, that's so cool, until you consider that they announced it in May, and so there's a whole section of people who would have probably bought an Xbox in May, mm-hmm. who then held off till June, artificially deflating May's numbers and increasing June's numbers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of saw that. I was like, huh, you know, okay, that's sneaky. All right. And then they released just recently the sales for the entire quarter, which, again, you know, let's say you've got 3 months of sales and the final month doubles. That means that your sales should be up 33% or so. And yeah. they were only up 10%. So that kind of confirms the suspicion that they were kind of putting spin on it or kind of misrepresenting the data that, you know, really there wasn't the kind of boost that you would see from a true doubling in sales. And really it's one third of what you would expect based on what they were claiming.
Huh.
So yeah, don't trust numbers, people. They're really, really easy to manipulate.
Yeah. That's some good detective work on you, buddy.
Unless you're in a math class.
Yeah.
So could this be, I wonder, I mean, could Microsoft in general be in a little bit of trouble? Because I don't think people are particularly thrilled about the Windows 8, and I don't see the Windows Phone, you know, de-seeding the iPhone anytime soon.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem that Microsoft is facing, and why they're getting, you know, why they're laying off so many people, is has a lot to do with them dissolving their bond with Nokia. Like, okay. Basically, they're divesting all of that just because the Windows Phone initiative is actually like a really big failure for them. Games is definitely falling flat on its face 2 to a certain extent. I think the Microsoft's entire political, internal, financial structure is really confusing just because of the antitrust stuff. They're technically considered to be a bunch of different companies, but all of them, like online services influences games and games influences entertainment. They're closing down their entertainment, but the game studios that they have internal are still there for some reason.
That's the weird thing, is they're closing down their entertainment section, but they're still going to make everything that they've announced from their entertainment section.
So they're just moving it around like that. I think that is a bookkeeping kind of thing. So like Halo Nightfall is still gonna come out, all that. Like I can't point to and name any particular thing of Microsoft's that is like setting the world on fire or isn't a little bit of a snafu for them right now.
Well, like, that people don't hate.
Yeah. I was being generous. I think the closest thing that they've had to a success, it may be the Surface a little bit. Possibly.
Yeah, the Surface is kind
of people seem to like that window, you know, the Windows 8 ARM version aside. You know, I think that is probably their only kind of win thing recently, that and also them finally hopping on board the Microsoft Office subscription train. You know, as opposed to selling boxes to companies and having them never go away, or having them never come back, rather, you know, getting them to commit to paying $50 a month or whatever in order to keep access to their shit.
But I feel like even that, I mean, is something where it's not good for the consumer.
Oh, no.
And my point is, like, people can say, you know, all you want, like, oh, well, they're just trying to make money. But sooner or later, you have to do things that are good for the consumer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so much to which you can screw people over.
Yeah, I mean, doing things that are good for the consumer is kind of what, you know, it's a long-term strategy, and it doesn't make money immediately, so companies don't often tend to do it.
The consumer is boss. The consumer is boss. I've had that phrase nailed into my head so many times. It's I'm indoctrinated, so I believe it.
Well, no, I mean, it's just
the
like...
consumer is what?
Boss.
Boss. I thought you said lost.
No.
Find the consumer.
No. So one thing that is good for the consumer and that I think has the potential to really surprise everyone and be very successful for Microsoft is that they're coming out with the Kinect for PC.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is one of those things where, you know, the Kinect has a ton of power and potential, and we've talked about that on the show before, but it's kind of chained to this system in a way that just makes it, you know, like hides the light under a bushel, as it were. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, have been kind of breaking them to get them to work with a computer for a long time. And Microsoft is finally coming around to embrace that. Mm-hmm. And so I think we'll see a lot of cool stuff come out of that. It's got kind of Oculus Rift syndrome in that I think devs will do a ton of cool stuff with it. But, you know, they won't really be sure who to share it with other than other devs who have a Kinect. So. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing with the Kinect, at least so far, is people have done a ton of really cool stuff with it, just not games.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, on the PC, that doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it makes sense that they're going there. So that's, I think that is at least in my view, you know, so the numbers have turned out to be really depressing for Microsoft this past quarter. The Kinect is kind of, especially for PC, is kind of a way forward. That you know, they're ditching it for the console, but I could see the PC being a great home for it.
Yeah, it's weird because the most application that I see for the Kinect on PC is for research.
Yeah,
but even that, like the cool thing about the Kinect on the Xbox is that it's made for a living room, and so it can look at a whole room and kind of scan everybody there. On the PC, the optics in that are, you know, make it so that instead of looking at somebody who is 7 to 10 feet away, they're looking at somebody who is, you know, 18 to 24 inches away from it. You
yeah.
know?
Holy shit, I just had this vision.
For research, it would still be, I mean, still, you know, still the original distances would work.
So I just had this vision of an in real life spy party game where the Kinect watches everyone in a room and you have to convince it that you're AI or else it'll shoot you.
But it'll just like walk into a corner.
Yeah. Wait, so it's the inverse Turing test?
Yeah.
That's right.
That is funny. Yeah. So shit's dismal for Microsoft.
I wouldn't worry about their operating system. Every other one's terrible, but then every other one's pretty good. So
yeah. So it's like okay. So it's they're off rhythm from Star Trek, exactly. So the even ones are bad. I mean, six. What was it? Windows 6 technically would have been Vista, so that's terrible. They actually are inverse Star Trekking it. You know what? There has to be somebody out there who has made that same observation in a much.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. They don't. Listen.
I know. I'm just incredibly biased, just because of like how much people in computer science hate Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was reading like some history on a one of the main security specifications that's used used on the internet, and it sucks. It's really poorly done, and according to like the lore and the authors and stuff, the reason it's so crappy is because Microsoft complained about it, so they decided to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, when you control IT, you also control like everything that goes into everybody's computers. When you have that hegemony. David, how about you? You got a story?
Everybody get Linux.
OS, yes.
I mean, OS 10's pretty good. I like that.
Quick, actually I had two things. One, real quick, PSA, the current, Humble sale.
Oh shit. It's amazing.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Can I give some, highlights off of this?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Daikatana. Daikatana is one of the games on there, but, Thief Gold, Anachronox, a bunch of Hitman. I think pretty much the entire Deus Ex series. Deus Ex 1, wow. 2, and 3. Yeah, yeah. Lara Croft, The Guardian of Light, which is a pretty good game. Just Cause 2, Kane and Lynch 2. Yeah, it's the Humble Square Enix bundle. And there's going to be more games coming on to it soon. So that is pretty exciting.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, Mini Ninjas. I played Mini Ninjas.
Yes, you did.
That is a game. Mm-hmm. Remember it being passable. I'm trying to like manufacture one strong memory, yep, or opinion from that game, and it's just not coming to me.
Bold praise.
I remember there were ninjas and they were very small.
Yeah. No, except one of them wasn't, so
is it a dream? It was like my house, it was you, but your face was melting and you were a small ninja. Yeah,
what do you think it means?
I don't know. Yeah, this just continues the trend. If I buy this, I will I'll eventually have no physical games left, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even the ones you keep around for show.
I'm obviously exaggerating, but yeah, definitely good catch there, David. I was going to bring it up if nobody else did. So, yeah, the new Humble Bundle's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
What else, David?
Yeah, and this one's actually similarly fairly silly, but apparently EA has decided that they want to do what everyone else is doing, and they have delayed Battlefield Hardline to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna call it right now. I think we're going to have to like put the level on pause. Come a couple months, because there's just not going to be any new games.
Fuck that shit. Hasn't stopped us for the past 2 months.
Granted.
Yeah, I mean, no, 2014, the year so nice, we did it twice. Come on.
The year Cole finally gets through his backlog.
Backloggery attack. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, you're phasing out on me. Hey, there you go. You're back.
Okay. Do I sound okay?
Yeah. You had a little hiccup there, but you're going to get up to speed.
All right. Cool.
All right. I forget what people were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Quick. Segue.
Full gang through his backlog.
Oh, yeah. Ben, you made a quip about me backloggery attack or something like that.
you installed a core, yes, and then by accident your connection went down. Yeah.
This is going to be fun to edit, but I'd rather...
How convenient.
Rather than us try and recreate that, why don't we just move on? Because I don't want to hear mean things about me twice.
I think you're the only one left who hasn't done a story.
Oh, okay, cool. Mine's actually pretty similar to David's, though nowhere near as drastic. So in the same breath as EA delaying Battlefield Hardline, they also delayed Dragon Age Inquisition by a month to November the 21st from October something-ish. Saying, quote, "We appreciate the enormous support we've received from all of you to get to this point, and while this extra few weeks may not seem like a lot, I know the game you'll play will be all the better for it." So, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which is pretty crazy, because that was originally supposed to come out on October the 7th, which is also it's the same day that NBA 2K15, Alien Isolation, Middle Earth, The Shadow of Mordor, and Drive Club were supposed to come out, all of which are pretty big games in terms of that. So I don't know if they were trying to move to a less crowded day. I think the only one that's really a threat to them there is NBA, which is always kind of a powerhouse game whenever it drops, that sucks life away from everything else. Seriously, some of the biggest launches I ever worked were NBA 2K games.
That's interesting. A place I do not have a window to.
Yeah.
But in terms of like genre competition.
Yeah. You know what? The more I think about it, like, I'm excited about Dragon Age Inquisition. I'm not going to sleep on Aliens Isolation.
Really?
I think that looks fantastic.
Yeah, that does look like a game where I would not sleep.
Yeah.
No, I know. I'm a little bit disappointed because of the Alien series, the one I would care about playing a game is Aliens, and that game sucked.
What do you mean? Was there an Aliens game? Oh, you mean like Alien Colonial Marine or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm kind of disappointed that on the one I was interested in, I think that ship's done sailed.
Hey, David, if you want to play a game that's been informed by aliens, play any sci-fi shooter.
Oh,
so seriously, any granted, sci-fi shooter.
Granted.
Yeah, so just a heads up on that. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so I'm excited about Dragon Age Inquisition. I like how they're going to be handling getting your decisions in, just by offloading that onto a little web app to make that happen, which is pretty cool. I think that the less that I read about it or know about it ahead of time, the better. But I'm happy it exists, and I'm happy they took as long to develop it as they did. And didn't rush it out in a Dragon Age 2-esque fashion. So, yeah.
Yeah. One of those, yes, whenever you're ready, I'll be ready kind of situations.
Yep. I'll be here. I'll leave a light on. I'll leave the porch light on for you, Inquisition. It's cool.
You leave that swinging light over the interrogation table on for Inquisition.
Ah, true. Appropriate. Okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to take yours as mine and post. No hard feelings.
Multiplayer.
It is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it, most of you, a lot of the time. Dennis, you forgot what day it was this week.
All the people. Yeah, I should not post early again because freaking everyone on the internet responds. So you guys killed it.
Yeah.
Thank you. So there's a bunch of new Telltale games coming out. They seem to be masters of just kind of taking things that exist and giving them what I call the Telltale treatment. Say that five times fast. And so I just wanted to put it out there and see what people thought would be other cool existing properties, be it movies, TV series, or other games, as we've seen with Borderlands, for what would make a good Telltale game.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the question.
So, Ben, tell me what Sean says.
Sean says, Lord of the Rings universe would make sense. To step slightly out of the box, the Xanth series by Piers Anthony or the Myth series by Robert Asprin would lend themselves to a humorous game experience. Both are rich worlds and quite funny.
Yeah. The Xanth series is kind of like Discworld or like the Wheel of Time. It is one of the brands of off... Let's say it is one of the Aldi brands of fantasy that just I didn't get into. Like, my off fantasy was Dragonlance and the Dragon Riders of Bern. So, yeah.
But is it Is it
what grocery
like
store is that
comedy
like?
The way Discworld is?
What's that? The Xanth series is, yeah, that's comedy fantasy.
Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't speak to that. Has anybody read any of those? Xanth or Myth?
I have not. I've read some Discworld, and obviously I'm a huge Douglas Adams fan.
Yeah.
Those are kind of my reference points for that style, which would translate well. Mm-hmm. Has Telltale? I mean, there are some funny moments in their games, but have they done anything that's outright humorous the way like a LucasArts game would be?
Yeah,
Poker Night.
Yeah, Poker Night. They also like the Strong Bad's Cool Game for attractive people. Like that's where they cut their teeth. The Sam and Max games. Like they can do comedy.
That's in their blood.
Wait, yeah. You mean Walking Dead wasn't supposed to be funny?
I mean, Walking Dead has funny moments.
Yeah, it does actually.
Yeah. Oh man, David, how about you, Matthew Miller? What's he say?
Matthew Miller says, "I know it's a reboot, but would Blade Runner be so bad? Because everyone on this show hates Blade Runner, or Battlestar Galactica." Because you wouldn't know necessarily who was a Cylon. I think there's something there. I could see Battlestar Galactica being good. I loved the show, and I could see, kind of like he says, I feel like at least Walking Dead kind of traded on its sort of the inner group politics, and that's a big thing in Galactica.
Yeah, and I could see Blade Runner working in that as well. If the Blade Runner adventure game for PC, it's kind of broken. We talked about it on Watch Out for Fireball. So anybody who listens to this and listens to that, go check that out because it's definitely worth looking at, or at least listening to that episode about it. But like, I almost feel like that's one or two levels of weird or crazy for them to go to, like beyond what they've already done, because one of the awesome things that the PC game from the 90s did was it changes up who is a replicant and who isn't.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that might be too many variables for that for Telltale's thing to keep track of. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see here. Michael Christensen says, I haven't had the chance to play Valiant Hearts yet, but the idea of some type of original adventure set within a momentous historical episode seems to me to be ripe for a more Telltale-style treatment. I didn't see how long his response is, so I'm going to edit it on the fly. I think a major strength of this format is its ability to explore the effects that grand premises have on small-scale interpersonal relationships. Lots of games focus on putting the single-player protagonist at the center of historical happenings, with their actions having large-scale effects and super high stakes. I'd be interested in seeing more games whose stories and systems draw on how unexceptional lives are lived in these happenings, where the mundane and extraordinary collide in the small and big decisions that groups and individuals face in trying to navigate and overcome these moments. So he goes on to speak about the oft uncovered wars in video games, like why a World War One game probably wouldn't play because it just involves standing in the rain until your foot falls off.
Yeah.
he does posit the idea of doing a pretty good Slaughterhouse 5. Like Billy Pilgrim style game, which would be kind of neat.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, talking about how doing Brian K. Vaughan's "Why the Last Man" would be pretty good, or a loose adaptation of Howard Zinn's play of Emma Goldman's life, things like that. So talking about like Pinkertons, industrialists, Hey Dog, Bioshock Infinite did that. Not really, but yeah. Yeah,
so, Bioshock Infinite was totally historically accurate.
So what came to mind when he was describing kind of the what about the lives that aren't the heroes at the center of the conflict is a game coming out by 11-bit Studios called This War of Mine. So I dropped a link to the trailer in the robot. But that I think we've talked about it on the show before. That looks like a phenomenal game, and the whole premise is exploring the lives of the civilians affected by a conflict going on around them.
Yeah, Ben, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say this might be a nice segue into what I would suggest for a Telltale game, and this is kind of apropos of today's discussion, but I think a Wire Telltale game would be very interesting to see how they would pull it off.
Because
you have nice mechanics, like selling drugs, you know, to try and make money sort of thing, and then you have nice decision moments of whether or not to kill somebody.
Or just the idea of like playing one side off of the other, like just you know... It'd almost be like an Indigo Prophecy kind of thing, where advancing one side hurts the other, you know, so and so. Like if you were mm-hmm. able to build that, you know, criminal and police dichotomy into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think anything that involves investigation would be really good, and that rolls into mine, so I might as well go with that. But like X-Files or Twin Peaks Telltale game?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Like
it was just... called Alan Wake.
Yeah. or Deadly Premonition, rather.
Or X-Files the video game.
Yeah. Which I heard wasn't bad as far as FMV adventure games go.
It was like 7 discs for the PlayStation 1. It was insane.
Yeah, and there were a couple more for PC as well, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but just like anything, you know, like The Wire would be great because like each season would be its own like case. You know, and like X-Files, it'd be kind of cool to do like a 5-episode season, but each episode was like a monster of the week kind of thing.
Hmm.
Like I'd rather them do like a like early to mid X-Files and not like later where they
not
ran on
when
the,
it just yeah
yeah yeah. It was like do
I'm watching through the X-Files right now and yeah
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and good.
It jumps the sharks and then goes on for like 10 more seasons.
Yeah, but it's really hard to beat early X-Files though. In terms of before they start taking themselves too seriously. And to speak a little bit more to Michael, you know, to Michael's response here, him mentioning Why the Last Man makes me think if we had a Saga video game.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's that comic book series I really like, which was specifically made and written at least with a partial goal of never being able to be filmed, because it's just this massive, you know, alien worlds and stuff, just crazy. But I could totally see it being a good video game, especially because it is in a lot of ways a really human drama, even though it is about a conflict between goat people and bug people. Seriously, Saga. Creepy revelation. I can see what everybody buys on Amazon through our link. Thank you everybody for using that. It's it's duckfeed.tv/tipjar. There we go.
I think we should clarify, he can't see what you buy, he can see what people buy.
Yes. So I can't attach
names. It's anonymous.
Yes, it is totally anonymous. But I can see lists. And, you know, I have no information about where it goes or anything, but just I see that a person bought X, Y, or Z. And occasionally I will see somebody buy Saga Volume 1, 2, and 3. And it's like, yep, there you go. Cool. This is a person who has it all figured out.
Godspeed, traveler.
Yes. Enjoy. Oh, man. So, yeah. Wire, man. Yeah. It might be a good idea to do, like, a podcast about it. Because that's exactly what we need.
I would totally do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Let's workshop that. Let's keep that one
walk
under our cap.
The garden, dude. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Huh. That's a pretty good name for it too. Huh. Okay. Dennis, what's David say?
David suggests the Dresden Files. Mm-hmm. He says there are plenty of sub characters doing things in the background to tell some good stories.
Yeah.
I am not familiar.
It's like Magic Detective kind of guy.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
It's pretty well regarded.
It's real popular. People who like are really into fantasy, it's one that's you pretty much, if you're really into fantasy, you like the Dresden Files basically.
Yeah. I've been real curious to check it out, but my reading time has been diminished because life. No, I do not doubt you based on what I've heard, David.
Yeah.
Both of you, any of you, every David, I'll give you a pass on just this one.
That's actually a subplot in the Dresden Files that all Davids are actually a singular entity.
Yes.
Just we, like Kitley in the world.
We can neither confirm nor deny.
Are you saying David is Legion? Many beings under one name. Okay. Oh, man. Let's see here. Ben, what's Jeffrey say?
He says, in before Cole mentions The Dark Tower.
Yes.
But seriously, I'm partway through this second book, and I thought it'd be a great fit for a Telltale game. I think it's dark fantasy / western tone. Could easily be adapted to Telltale's visual style. Plus, Telltale games are great at giving you choices that mean a lot in the moment, but that ultimately lead down the same path and are different reactions to what happens that makes us connect to the story. That's true. In the same way, the Gunslinger's path is already sealed by both his feeling of duty and also explicitly by fate, but it isn't always clear what the right or noble thing to do is in any situation. Alternatively, they could probably do a lot with exploring the events before or during the fall of the Gunslinger's Order. I don't know what that means. Sorry, I forget if there's a proper name for it.
Yeah, I mean, just it's you know, the Knights of Alder, you know, the forces of Midworld. Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, the Gunslingers of Gilead. Yeah.
Yeah. And, that's a brilliant way to hand wave the fact that you know, most divergent stories eventually need to converge. Like, that would fit really well within the fiction of the world.
Yeah, it really would. The idea that nothing you do has any effect on anything. it sounds like I'm joking, but like, you know, you could actually build like interesting commentary around that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, for sure.
Like right into it. Yeah, I decided to shuck and jive and not be predictable by saying Twin Peaks. So, yeah, but Dark Tower, I could, yeah, definitely. Dennis, did you ever finish the Dark Tower? Did you read the last chapter of the last book, or did you leave it where it left?
Oh no, I have not. I've thought about going back many times, but that would require going to the library and getting the book. Maybe I'll just look it up online. I have not read the last chapter yet.
Okay. Man, that's so weird. You're the only person I know of who heeded his warning about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Everybody else I've talked to who's read the book just read it through to the end.
Yeah, I don't know.
What is this?
Basically, I mean, you know, so it gets into a lot of weird meta stuff, but, you know, the writer, I was about to say Steven Spielberg, Stephen King, he kind of directly addresses you, and, you know, it gets to an end that I found pretty satisfying. Although, you know, if you were the type of person who's like, I want to know everything about everything, I want it all laid bare before me, then I could see it being frustrating. But I was satisfied with the end. And there's a whole section that's like, hey, you know, this for me is where the story ends. This is where I felt like the book kind of came to a close. However, I understand that, you know, people are going to want to know more. And so if that's you, read on. But just know that the true story and the story that I wanted to tell ends here. Mm-hmm. And I read that and I was like, cool, dude, no, we're good. And I just put it down. So
yeah,
can I piggyback off this and share a similar book that I'm reading right now?
Yeah.
It's called Go to Lesher Bach, and there's a similar conversation they have where they talk about they had an idea to write a book where it ends in the middle of the book, because that way it surprises the reader, since they wouldn't know that the ending's coming up by the physicality of the book.
Oh, yeah.
and so then they say that they decide they're going to do this, but they need to add like a bunch of filler in the second half of the book to make it look like an actual book. And so they're like, okay, well, how are we going to indicate to the reader that it's the end? You're like, all right, well, we'll just put a code and then we'll have the characters do something that they wouldn't normally do. And then they don't tell you where the ending is. So you have to try and figure out where the ending is.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you could always just do the House of Leaves approach and just have half the book be like random additional appendices.
Yeah, like so some of which are the entire story of the book.
Yeah,
yeah.
I really need to read through that that again.
Yeah, no, I've intended to do that just because it'd be a real quick read for me.
There's
an app for you.
What's that?
Say that again. Say that again. That would be a real quick read for you.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, like realistically, it is a 400 page novel that happens to take up 900 pages. You know,
yeah.
And just like if you go into it knowing what the book is about, and you know, knowing how to approach it and what you can pay attention to and not pay attention to, you can skate through it. I've read that book like seven or eight times.
It's Good book.
Yeah.
I suppose that helps.
Yeah. I was still counted among one of my favorites. And I occasionally look and see. I'd be real interested to see what an ebook version of that would look like. I know he's been planning it, but it also that also seems to run counter to the notion of the thing itself. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You mentioned the ending in the middle. I just finished up Three Musketeers this week, and the way it ends is just like it gets to the last chapter, and they just start killing off characters. Like, it's really, really weird.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything about Dark Tower, but this notion of where things end and where they begin also takes into effect there too. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, it's So I do something really weird with books. I want to make sure that, like, I'm going to put this out there. Let me know if anybody else does this. When I get a book, I will read the last sentence of it, and then I will,
like,
and then I will start
it?
From the beginning. Just read it from back to front,
like at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, so you like read the book as though you were Benjamin Button?
No, that was just a little joke. I say. No. But like when I sit down, the first thing I will look at, aside from the outside of it, is I will actually go to the very last page and read the last sentence.
Huh?
And then I will start
from
the beginning.
A particular reason?
No.
So you know what's infuriating, and this is a memory I have from my childhood. There was a book at the library about a kid running to become president, and on something it was like, you could read the book or you could turn to the last page to find out. And I turned to the last page to find out. And the last page is literally like a little patronizing speech. Like, you have to work for things in life.
Oh, fuck
you. If you really want
book.
To, you can turn back. Yeah. You can turn back another page to read the ending, but I think you should read the whole book. And that was my exact reaction.
So did you turn back the last page and read the ending?
Yeah, of course he didn't when he was a kid.
Yeah, because that doesn't work. All it'll do is make kids do things out of spite.
Wow.
Yeah. Who's next? I forget who's in the rotation.
I think we're at the top of the order.
No.
So David, what's Gary say?
Sure. Anything other than Borderlands? Fuck that fiction.
Yeah. And then Michael piggybacks on that, like, more like Borderlands, am I right?
Yeah, I know. I personally like the fiction of Borderlands, but I feel like it would completely not translate to a Telltale game, because the fiction of Borderlands is about how much fun it is to have crazy people blow stuff up.
Yeah.
By which I mean, there's no real plot to the game.
I mean,
it's just like... like 20-hour fireworks show.
I mean, it's a tone, right? It's a like very, very. I mean, it's a Deadpool-esque like, ain't we stinkers kind of tone throughout. Says the person who played an hour of Borderlands 2.
But yeah,
I was thinking about this.
Gary on this.
I think that Borderlands, and this is funny that both are mentioned here, but Borderlands is the Dark Tower meets Looney Tunes. Mm-hmm. Like, you just smash those things together. It's got all the kind of the...
I mean, is it Dark Tower more than the idea that it blends, like, desert post-apocalyptic sci-fi with Western? Or
It's that. It's also kind of a little bit of the meta side of it bleeding over.
Okay.
That I find there. And then... So mainly those two things. And then just Deadpool is probably another apt... component there, but just that kind of corniness or jokiness layered on top.
Yeah, I just like what turns me off about the idea of taking Telltale and doing this is like Telltale's really good at doing character, and when I look at Borderlands, I see caricatures.
I don't know about that. So like Sir Hammerlock was a great character, and I think it's. You have to dig for it, and it's told through little dialogue pieces, so that the delivery of that character is very clumsy by necessity of it being this over-the-top first-person shooter. But I think that he's a really interesting, nuanced character that stands on his own right. And there's definitely the joke characters out there that don't. But I'd be interested to see if they don't feel beholden to the main games. And it's like, hey, we're going to take this interesting world... and tell a story in it versus like we're going to do a sequel to Borderlands. I think it could be good. It just depends on how close they try to hew to the originals.
Yeah.
Because if they do that, if they try to kind of stay too close to the originals, it'll be kind of trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
And that's something where Telltale's strength could actually work against it, because they're really good about sticking to a source material.
Yeah.
Like, Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People feels like an extra long, you know, Strong Bad cartoon or Homestar cartoon. The Walking Dead, like, captures a lot of what's really good about that comic book. In fact, in a lot of ways, one-ups it just by being better paced. You know, Sam and Max, I mean, just like, they just picked it up and continued with it. I haven't played The Wolf Among Us, but people say really good things about that as well. This might be a case where they pick a stinker and just like, let's make it a stinker. And, I mean, not that Borderlands is a stinker, but just, you know, if we're qualifying, you know, if sticking close to the source material is a bad thing here, Telltale might done fuck up by doing good.
Might yeah. done fuck up by doing good.
Yes.
Someone diagram that sentence.
Yep, do it.
As a side note, I still want to see a Sir Hammerlock game.
What is that, like a first-person shooter parody game?
I just anything where he is the character you're playing as.
He has his own DLC now, I think. I don't know if he's the playable character, but...
This might be...
Not sure.
So aside from Sam and Max, which actually, I mean, probably... There's more Sam and Max in comics than in games. You know, aside from like Hit the Road, but this might be Telltale's first for modern Telltale's first foray into making a video game of a video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is which again is uncharted territory for them. So they're doing this and Game of Thrones, right? Mm-hmm. They're doing that pretty much simultaneously, right?
Speaking of uncharted territory,
ba-ba-ba-ba.
That wasn't my example. I just thought that was too good of a segue to pass up.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
The Uncharted games would make cool Telltale games, I guess.
Oh, by taking the shooting up.
Yeah, but by I mean those are really strong characters that could have a whole game around their relationships.
I mean,
versus the shooting mechanics.
Taking it one level up, I mean, an Indiana Jones game in Telltale would be pretty cool.
Oh sure, yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
Weren't they? I mean, the Indiana Jones adventure games were fairly well received.
Yeah, Curse of Atlantis. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, and that goes right back to, you know, Telltale does LucasArts really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Has anybody not said what they wish to see before we round out with Chris?
I actually have not.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, you after you. Okay, why don't you pick a direction and go?
Yeah, I will. I will. No, damn it. It's my turn.
It's Dennis. I'm making a decision.
No, so mine would be kind of in the vein of Strong Bad School Game for Attractive People would be an Archer video game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that'd be pretty sweet.
God. An Archer Alpha Protocol.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Archer Protocol.
And you just strip away all the things that made Alpha Protocol shitty, I understand, because I haven't actually played the game.
It's nothing. You bite your tongue. Sorry, you'd unwandered into a den of very, very hot.
I forgot. I have a bunch of apologists on the show. It's a weird concentration of people who love Alpha Protocol and hate Dishonored. It's like...
Yep.
But yeah, it's
this fucking
like
show. Go ahead.
Alpha Protocol, only Archer-esque and focused on the kind of Telltale elements.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, Archer is basically just a radio play.
Yeah, really,
you know, like, I mean, it looks nice and still, but its animation is shit. Like, just take that, make them, you know, 3D, and just get H. John Benjamin into a video game. That's really all I need.
Yeah, please, can we? Please, yeah. H. John, I know you listen, man. Let's do this.
Yo, HJ, Hojo, what up? Oh yeah, no, I agree. Archer would be fantastic. Man, I need to go see that. I need to. I have a feeling that there are episodes I haven't seen, but I was kind of in a fugue state the last time I did a watch through the series. So
yeah, there's. I've watched season 3. I have not watched season 4, and I think they're in season 5. So I'm way behind. It's Breaking Bad syndrome. It's like must watch, but no time.
Yeah, must watch, no time. David, how about you?
Sure. I'd say for me on this one, there's maybe a difference between games I think would make good Telltale games and games I would like to see Telltale try to make games of.
You mean properties?
So, like, I would like to see them, like, I would like to see what they ended up with making, say, like, an adaptation of, like, Superman or Batman or something. Although I don't think it'd necessarily be good. I think it'd be entertaining.
Like, it would have to be, like, Batman would be the better one for that, because, like,
I want to see Superman, actually. I just want to see someone do Superman in a medium where punch cannot be your main verb.
Yeah, but I think the through line in a lot of this is, like, the dialogue. Like a bunch of these are, you know, really dependent on, like, is it interesting to watch two people talk to each other? And the second Superman opens his mouth, I'm like, fuck you.
No, so more seriously, I would say, as long as they're doing TV shows, I'd say Farscape, I think, would be interesting. I also think Lovecraft could be interesting. Kind of hits on a lot of the points people have made above, you know, investigations, you know, dialogue-y, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. At the Mountains of Madness would actually be really good, like you with your team of people going into it. No.
Oh man, that just spurred the thought of The Thing as a Telltale game.
Oh, that fuck also, yeah. That'd be a good one.
God, I love
that.
That
would
thing.
Be kind of similar to who was there above that mentioned the Cylons, you know, that whole mechanic where you don't know who's actually on your team.
Mm-hmm. Battlestar Galactica, yeah.
Yeah, Matt mentioned that.
Yeah. I mean, like, I like The Thing game for PS2. So I
said no person ever.
Oh, I liked it. Said me. I mean, but like,
I loved it.
I won't argue that it's an. So I won't argue that it was executed well. But like, it was, you know, to a certain extent faithful to that concept, or at least brought in the notion of trust and paranoia in a, you know, in an intellectually satisfying way, if not a you know, a gameplay satisfying way. But that might, you know, again fall into Blade Runner, you know, to the Blade Runner trap of once you know who the replicant is, or once you know who is infected. Yeah,
I'm just bitter because I kept dying every time they threw an actual monster at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, is there any...
No, I think overall I would have to, though, go with Farscape, just because it's Star Trek if no one trusted each other. Right. And I feel like that would work for Telltale.
Yeah. Is there anything better than Kurt Russell's beard in The Thing? That is one of the best
His
Hollywood
beard
beards.
Actually was its own character.
Like I mean, like, outside of like Robert Redford and Jeremiah Johnson, like Kurt Russell's beard in The Thing it's a force to be reckoned with.
Just like his goggles.
Yep.
Yeah, but in movie trivia, it's actually got its own line in the credits.
Oh, does it?
Kurt Russell and then Kurt Russell's beard.
And then his 17 beard tenders.
Yeah. Grows silently, yeah.
You can watch that again. That movie makes the distinction as the only horror movie I like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. It's real good.
That is one that is like The Shining or Blade Runner or Chinatown, where I will just watch it always.
I was kind of surprised you didn't mention Chinatown, actually, because that's the only one of your like standard mentioning list that hasn't been mentioned already.
like a Glengarry Glen Ross Telltale game would be pretty good, like being the salesperson out there, you know, like the intrigue of who took the leads. Yeah, I could see that.
Ensemble, I feel like cast. Chinatown would be better suited for like L.A. Noir type game.
Well, I mean, L.A. Noir is Chinatown. Like that's why I didn't bring it up, because it's already been done.
Have you going off on left? Have you seen any of the things for what's the game? It's like Vlad the Impaler. That's kind of a similar idea. It's looking like.
Yeah. That's on the front page of Steam, and I've been very curious about it. It looks like a very semi kind of menu driven game.
Yeah.
Looks neat. Yeah. So I'm going to round us out with Christopher Schley, who writes in saying, I wrote an 8,000-word paragraph on why The Dresden Files should be a game. Then I noticed someone else said that. Same with The Dark Tower. Ah, fuck. There's a young adultish book series called that Clive Barker does called Aberrat. I would love to see a Telltale game based on that. It's already a very colorful world, as illustrated by Barker's oil painting illustrations. And I like the idea of the actual world being an archipelago of 24 islands, all set as permanent hour fixtures on a clock. It's filled with a ridiculous amount of interesting characters in both personality and look, and has a great mix of humor, horror, fantasy, and lots of danger. It's a shame that it's not really popular enough to warrant any adaptations. Yeah, I haven't heard of that. I can't imagine Clive Barker doing a YA novel, actually.
I'm you know, an ignorant cretin, so who's Clive Barker?
He's like one of those old guard horror novelists. He's actually dipped his toes into video games a couple of times.
Is he the guy that made Jericho?
Yeah, yep. Jericho, and in the realm of good games, Undying. I couldn't name a single one of his books.
Wow, this is
apparently he's made Undying, Jericho, and Nightbreed.
Got a bunch of Wiki ninjas up in here, Dennis. What you saying?
I googled the art for this. It's what's the artist who did all the cover art for Tool? Forget his name, but it's got a really really bright color palette without necessarily being cheery. Very very interesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy that I know about this, because that sounds like a very interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. So thank you everybody for chiming in. Man, this is a good line. Good job, Dennis, on this question, because I feel like it's something we mention offhandedly a lot. But to actually put a little bit of definition to it
is
a good exercise. Yeah, awesome. So if you want to,
I will plug here. Oh, just real quick, I will plug here that I have to, you know, increasingly think harder and harder to come up with questions that we haven't done already. So if anyone has ideas for questions, I'm more than happy to take them. We've had a couple people write in with question ideas, which we have used. So please feel free to do that.
Yeah, either send us a message on the Facebook page, that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, or you can pop them into the contact form. It is duckfeed.tv/contact. Select the level from that drop down menu, and we will throw that into the pot for you know, consideration. Yeah. So, like we said, we have the Facebook page. Usually those questions go up on Tuesday afternoons, and we really appreciate everybody throwing in on those. Grind it up.
The grind.
It's time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the course of this past roughly week or so. Does anybody want to lead? David, how about you? You had something new, right?
Sure, yeah. Actually, Dan, you're going to have to help me with this. What was the whole history of this?
Richard Luttrell, I think I'm saying that right. I'm not looking at the Steam page, so I'm going off of memory. But is a fan of the show and sent me a game called One Finger Death Punch, which looks freaking awesome, and I was really excited about, until, like, Shovel Knight, I realized to my horror that it's not for Mac. And so I had to pass it off and gave it over to David. So how is it? It looks really good.
It's really good.
Shovel Knight?
It's, yes.
No, no.
Wait, what?
One Finger Death Punch.
There we go. Okay, cool. I just want to make sure, because you really made it sound like we were about to talk about Shovel Knight.
No, I wish.
We're getting excited. No, you know, it's nice to see a game that gives you exactly what it promises, which in this case is a game where you punch people to death with one finger. No, basically, kind of the rundown of it is the game uses two buttons. You know, left mouse button, you attack to the left. Right mouse button, you attack to the right. And
can you repeat that?
Say that again?
I'm just kidding. I was making a bad joke.
So you're a stick figure, all the enemies are stick figures, and basically enemies walk to you from the left to the right. And there's a little marker on the ground, and when they get within a range of you, the area lights up, you press that button, and you punch and kill them. But, you know, as they come and with the distancing, it ends up sort of being like a rhythm game, kind of. The big selling points of it, though, is that it sort of self-animates a fight scene. So, as you are attacking in a direction, you're kind of, you're covering ground in that direction. And so you'll kind of chain attacks, depending on which way you attack and whether enemies are guarded and or are armed and stuff like that. You can eventually, enemies will attack you with a knife. And then once you kill them, you can press in one direction or the other and throw the knife and automatically kill someone regardless of range. So it sort of, you really need to watch the videos, but it self-animates into these, Jackie Chan-esque kung fu fights that are just amazing.
Rub it in, why don't you?
Say that again?
It's the best game I've ever played.
I was legitimately excited to play it before I saw it was... I'm still legitimately excited to play it, but I just can't.
It was better than 1,000 Super Bowls.
I'm really... Have you checked if it's on, iPad or anything? Because it really feels like a game that's, screaming to be a touchscreen game.
I have not.
But I like the presentation style. It's, big time set up to be, kung fu movie-esque in terms of, the sort of, corny, over-the-top scenes and, all the dialogue is, sounds like the announcer from, the old Street Fighter. So, the game starts up with its instructions, which include... No button mash. So just the whole presentation is very, very likable. It's a fun game, and it seems like they progressively incorporate more and more kind of rules that are twists on what you're doing, and it seems like it'll eventually become almost like a puzzle game, sort of. But very good stuff.
I mean, what are the visuals like? Is it a simple presentation? Because it sounds like everything else is really boiled down.
It is very simple. Have you seen there's real popular, if you look on YouTube, people like to make the stick figure fighting videos.
Yeah, the big thing on Newgrounds, the Zao Zao.
Yeah, that's exactly. Basically what this is.
Okay.
You're a stick figure. Everyone's a stick figure. Real simple weapons, stuff like that. So yeah, it's real simple, presentation, real simple interface.
Dennis, at one point, didn't you make one of those in PowerPoint?
I did. I was really far along. That is most likely lost to time, unfortunately.
That's sad.
I had a class that it was a shop class in high school. That was, I blew through everything just in the first 5 minutes and was just sitting at a computer for an hour. And so for an hour a day, I would work on PowerPoint movies. So I had a stick figure fighting one that was pretty extensive. I had a South Park episode that was just them getting killed, or Kenny, rather, getting killed with all of the different shop tools that were around me.
Within eyesight.
There were a couple others. The fun thing is, though, I spent 95% of the class working on these things, and my desk was facing the teacher, and I'm a goody two shoes. I tried to make sure the teacher wasn't watching or didn't realize what I was doing. But one day I'm doing a run through of the South Park episode as far as I can get it, or as far as it's finished, and I suddenly realize that the teacher is standing right behind me watching the screen. And there's this really awkward just pause where, we both look at each other. And then he just starts laughing. And he thought it was the funniest thing. He asked me to finish it on class time and send it to him so he could use it for, the safety instruction day at the beginning of the class.
That's
so
great.
He's retired now. I doubt it's still in circulation. But it was, It was pretty intense. Done in PowerPoint.
Well, I mean, So when we say all done in PowerPoint, I saw these when we were in the dorms, or at least the stick figure one. We're talking frame by frame animation.
You literally duplicate slide, move it a little bit, duplicate slide, move it a little bit.
Do you know how fucking nuts that is?
I was bored, man. You do crazy things when you're bored.
Apparently. Huh. Yeah, that's so yeah, one finger death punch is the game we were talking about. People like it when we recapitulate, when we say what we were talking about.
I searched, it does not seem to be available on any of the iOS devices.
That's crazy. Yeah, because I mean it almost seems like I almost expected and wondered if maybe it was if maybe this was a port. Just because the gameplay seems like it would be so perfect for that.
Yeah. This this distilled down fighting game kind of thing. What's that other one? Dropkick?
Yeah.
Oh, Dive Kick.
Dive Kick. Yeah, Dive Kick. That's that's something else that's in the same vein. I really like Nidhogg is that's probably a little bit more technical than this. That's pretty I like that trend a lot.
Although that the one you just said, the fencing one,
yeah, Nidhogg,
reminds me of it a lot in terms of the look and in terms of there's a certain degree of a similar where you're kind of always on the move. It's there's a certain degree to which the gameplay is about, it has some puzzle elements, but it's can you solve this puzzle? Rapid fire, like constantly.
Yeah, Nidhogg is a beautiful game. I love the way it looks, like the color and pixel art, whatever. But the color choices they make are really good. Huh. What else?
It was real cheap last week on Steam, so I picked up Tomb Raider because I've given up on ever re-upping my PlayStation Plus membership. Mm. I'm literally, according to the game, halfway through the game. I'm at 50% completed. So, have you guys played this game, Al?
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Dennis, you have
5 minutes. 5 minutes of it.
Okay. I'm really, really enjoying it. The QuickTime events are sort of a weakness, but they're much better on PC. I think partially because it seems like they kind of, probably a lot because I'm more familiar with it, but it seems like also they correspond a bit better to what you're doing. But the actual gameplay itself, I'm really enjoying. I like the storyline. I like the fact that it's a Nathan Drake / Indiana Jones type character that's actually legitimately an archaeologist. So that's kind of entertaining.
That belongs in a museum, and I'm going to take it right there.
Well, just like the fact that a lot of your running commentary is like her speculating on the history and trying to actually figure out what's going on as opposed to just shooting everything.
Yeah.
I do feel like there's definitely a transition in the game, to where it goes from being very much a most dangerous game esque stealth survival game to where it turns the corner and becomes much more combat focused.
Ben, you commented on this too, right? Like it's a shocking parallel to not shocking, unsurprising parallel to Far Cry 3, where the first part of it is, man, violence is shitty, right? Aren't these people monsters? To I am become monster.
No, my opinion on this was that opinion was way overblown.
Was it?
It's
okay,
just
cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a Resident Evil kind of... It's kind of like Resident Evil 4, I think. They steal from a lot of mechanics from a lot of different games, and all of them are pretty well done. But I didn't have a problem with, her emotional transition or whatever between... I don't know. What did you think of that, David?
Well, I guess what I'd say, first on the Far Cry 3, I would say it would be, the first half of the game is, the first hour of Far Cry 3. So there's definitely a much bigger difference in terms of how long they dwell on it. And I would say from a storyline standpoint, I think it's actually a pretty good thing. One, I think the point of it is sort of to be an origin story of how, you know, how she becomes a badass. Two, I think they, you know, they don't necessarily big time dwell on it the way, like, well, the way to a certain degree, say, like a Spec Ops does, but they do dwell on, like, some of how it's, you know, the violence and stuff affects her, which I think's good. The other thing is, even though you become much more badass, they keep it gritty. So it's like my character, I've specialized in melee, which means I now have like 15 very effective ways to kill someone using a climbing pick. So it's a thing where, like, even though it's now much more combat based, they still keep it as with a gritty kind of improvised feel. I was more commenting, like, I think from a storyline it's good. I just think from a gameplay standpoint, I think it's stronger as a kind of hybrid stealth combat game that is on a straight combat game. So, one thing that did disappoint me is there was some point where they finally admit the fact that, okay, you've gotten the crap beat out of you too much, you have to get medical attention or you're going to die. And then you proceed to then, in order to get to medical equipment, wade through, like, waist-deep water, or, like, shoulder-deep water, maybe, that's full of, like, rotting animal carcasses.
And you need medical attention. Go wade in this water until there are leeches.
Right. Well, and then you get to the medical supplies, and there's nothing there, and you have to, like, cauterize your wounds by heating up the metal arrowheads and, like, you know, doing that. And that kind of disappointed me. That's like, no, if you're going to do that, like, metal arrowhead, you know, like, cauterizing your wounds is not going to cure septic shock. Like, I know, it a little bit disappointed me that, like, it started to get a little bit more realistic and then, like, decided it was having none of that. But no, it's a good game. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a really good sequel when they make a sequel. Like, it's a great base game, or there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, see, it's hard for me to say because I don't know how the second half's going to be, but it looks like it's setting up to a little bit be like Batman Begins and then The Dark Knight, in terms of this one seems to be very much a strict origin story in terms of, like, how do I get to being the hero? And then it looks like they're setting up for the next one to be, what is the beginning of me being the hero? Kind of a second origin story. Does that sort of make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of seems like it's the break. Like, this one is her being broken down, and whatever the sequel is going to be is her being built up.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, there is some of the, you know, her being built up too. But yeah, no, I think that's a fairly accurate way to say it.
Have you raided any tombs yet, David?
Yes, I have. And it's a lot of fun.
Basically,
there's, you know, optional side tombs that each of them is basically like a portal-esque puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're kind of self-contained and a little bit more, you know, require more thought than some of the others. So, I think that's a strong point. Actually, I was thinking, is there a name for, I feel like there's kind of been a new genre that is, you know, say Assassin's Creed, Uncharted, the sort of like climbing puzzler.
Ubisoft. It's called Ubisoft.
It's called the Ubisoft.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what'd you think of the rating the tombs?
I liked it. I would not say it is better than Portal or Portal 2, but it is still like a fun distraction from the regular game. So, yeah.
Yeah. The thing you posted, Dennis, I shouldn't talk about. Well, Dennis Ben posted a image of Laura getting her head impaled on a spike. Do you remember that section?
Yes.
There's one section of the game that is just awful, because it's basically two very, very difficult sections of QuickTime events. And this in particular one, like, I literally died like 15 times in a row. Okay. Simply because you're trying to avoid obstacles that you can't see until it's too late to start avoiding them. So it's straight up, at least for me, it was straight up memorization. What's the correct, directions to dodge? Was it the same for you?
I can't remember. I think I died once, maybe. But yeah, it should have probably been playtested, because there's plenty of videos abound online of people being scarred for life by playing that section of the game.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, that section is immediately preceded by a section where is the exact same thing, except this time you get impaled on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. There's some interesting sections with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Is that all, David?
I just had one other thing. I've been playing Resident Evil 6 with Jala, co-op mode.
Yeah.
We beat Leon's campaign and then have done, I think, the first two chapters of, Jake and Cherry?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I
Jake's
don't know,
from Resident Evil 5, correct?
No, Jake is Chris. Wesker's son.
Oh, okay.
Jake is the character that you can play through the entire thing just doing kung fu.
Yeah. And wrestling moves, weirdly enough. Like, he straight up suplexes people. It's real weird. I think of all those campaigns, the one that holds up the best for me is Jake's.
That's what I've heard. I feel like there's definitely some fairly good character chemistry in that one.
Yeah.
Although Sherry is like, I feel like the poster child for like, I know she just comes across as very like homeschoolery, which I'm told by Jala is because that's basically her backstory.
Yeah, I mean, like, so the funny thing is they are both the sons and daughters of Umbrella researchers. And so Sherry, after the events of Resident Evil 2, where, you know, her dad turns into a monster and her mom dies over the course of trying to kill that monster, or is shot by Leon or Ada or somebody, Sherry was taken in by the and this will be revealed in the story, and I don't know why I'm being the Resident Evil lore expert, aside from that is one of the few things I can do competently. Sherry has basically been living inside the CIA. Like, she is a ward of the government because of what is special about her, which you will find out over the course of this.
Sure. And so she comes across it. I mean, it's based on her backstory, it makes sense. It's basically that, but comes across as, I guess you could kind of say, sort of ditzy. Would that kind of be maybe not exactly the right?
Sheltered and naive, I think, would be the less sexist way to say it. Not accusing you of sexism in that, but it's probably the more sensitive way to put it.
Sure. But I don't know, like, that's really entertaining so far. I really like Leon. I don't know, I enjoy his character, so I really enjoyed that campaign.
Yeah.
And it just the degree to which it just keeps getting more and more over the top is fun.
Yeah, so, like, I would have liked Leon's campaign a lot better if it didn't take that, you know, if two-thirds of it in the middle didn't take place inside an ever-deepening church sewer.
Yeah, that...
like, why are these ruins underneath a college campus?
I was just... I figured that the final boss of his campaign was going to be Diablo.
And I like what happens once they get to China.
Yeah.
like him fighting Simmons and just revealing a little bit more about that story with Simmons, Ada, and Carla. I mean, that is the best thing about that game to me.
Yeah, although I feel like, you know, I a little bit like, you know, I kind of like the House of the Dead, the like crazy mansion thing, although from an actual storyline and probably a gameplay standpoint, it made no sense. I almost wish they... I really liked the first couple levels, which were just like city overrun by zombies, like,
yeah,
kind of the I've played none of these before five effectively. I'm told that's supposed to be like a throwback to like the first and second game.
It is.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. I know. I'm interested to see. I feel like I'm interested to see what Resident Evil 6 or 7 is, rather. I wish they would double down kind of on the you know, BOWs, you know, BSAA angle in terms of, like, I feel like what makes, story-wise, what makes Resident Evil a little different than the other zombie things is that these are zombies that are explicitly weaponized.
Yeah. It's been that way, like, since the beginning. I mean...
Right, right. And I feel like that's a interesting angle, and I think it would be interesting to see them do more... You know, what does the world look like when these are what terrorists use?
Mm-hmm. I think the movies explore that more fully too.
Sure,
because that world is just no more people left.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. So let's see here, Dennis. How about you?
Yeah, I kind of teased it. I guess you could say more of the same for me this week. Lots of PlayStation All-Stars. We went online for the first time, mm-hmm, ever. That was a mistake. You know, we tried for a ranked match, right? So, okay, let's see if we can find people who are at least closer to our skill level. And it was us, level one, versus almost exclusively level 999 people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everyone online has reached the level cap and is like, you know, trying to do this professionally. So we backed out of that real quick after a couple matches. But I will say, you know, as long as you don't mind losing by 10 points, you feel like, oh, hey, I'm a cool kid.
As long as you don't mind losing by 2 points, you can play against Jen.
Yeah.
Or by 10 points, rather.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that aside, you kind of feel like, you know, oh, hey, I'm a cool kid when you actually do manage to get a kill or a couple kills. Yeah. You know, it's going to happen. Just the nature of the fighting game is that, you know, you will be able to get them every once in a while. And so that was cool, as long as you ignore the fact that they're doing it to you about, you know, 10 times more frequently than you are to them.
Right.
But again, I'll touch again on the accessibility of the game, that since, you know, damaging or kicking or punching an opponent is not damaging them, but rather just building up your super meter. You know, it's much more welcoming to players who would otherwise just kind of be straight up have the crap kicked out of them and sent packing.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. I'm having my best XCOM Iron Man run yet. I'm into my third month. Actually, I might have just hit my fourth month. I'm not sure. Which it's incredibly hard to survive the first 2 months in any scenario. So the fact that I'm almost double that now is incredible. And I'm feeling pretty good about it. I don't know if it all comes crashing or, you know, down around my head, how devastated I will be. 'Cause this is definitely like, you know, I caught some major lucky breaks to get where I am. And it'll be really hard, having gotten this far into the game, if, you know, if I completely blow it, to say, all right, back to square one.
So having you found your stride with Iron Man, you know, does playing without the safety net kind of free you up to make more confident decisions? Or do you find that you're still pacing, you know, trying to weigh things out?
I literally play this game standing up and pacing in front of the TV. Like, it is intense. And that's probably why I enjoy it so much. I probably talk out loud like a crazy person a little too much. Apparently I am amusing to watch while I am playing it, so I try to not do that while other people are around. I have not thrown my controller yet, but I've come close. I think the most, as I've learned Iron Man and kind of how to play it differently than the main game, what I've noticed is that, you know, you're always going to make mistakes. The trick is to make the mistakes that will lose you one soldier instead of mistakes that will lose your entire squad. And so, you know, you still just have bad breaks or get caught off guard, and you're going to lose people. But you kind of learn to play it in a way to minimize that. And so that, you know, it used to be that I'd get halfway through a mission and then just get squad wiped in one turn. And I feel like I've started to catch on to what bad decisions on my part are opening myself up to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to be able to cover all my vulnerabilities, but I am able to kind of play much smarter now than I did before.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I mean, it's cool. There was the most recent mission I did. Your soldiers can panic and essentially, you know, you lose them for that turn. If they're panicked, they'll do some random action. So, you know, I had a very tough enemy come onto the screen, and three of my soldiers just immediately panic and go into bit lockdown, essentially. The tough enemy then killed my best soldier, like in the entire game. And this is all before I have a chance to act. Killed my best soldier, and I'm left with two soldiers, and there are other enemies on the screen. And was actually able to roll that into a victory with only that best soldier being lost. And the feeling of just freaking triumph when I, because the final shot was like a 50-50 chance on my part. And so just, you know, I'm already up out of my seat, but I'm like, yes, yes. And
you climbed up onto a table.
Yeah. And then Jen walks in and.
Don't judge me.
It is 1 a.m., you idiots. What are you doing? But just like, you know, I'm happy about it because it broke my way, and there's a million times where it doesn't, and I'm like, well, that's shitty. Uh-huh. But like that is just a ton of fun. But that's what I've been playing. I dabbled in Noir Syndrome, but I haven't played it enough to talk about it.
Yeah. So that
pan- you, this,
real quick. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Real quickly, ducking back into the panic thing or XCOM. Is there a way to mitigate that? Does that just always happen whenever? Is there a chance of that happening whenever something strong comes by, or does becoming more veteran or more senior? Like, I've seen some shit, man. This ain't nothing.
So yeah, every soldier has a will stat, which governs how likely they are to panic, and then later in the game, I think it governs some other things as well. So there's that. It's not like I spend time looking at those stats, or I would never choose the placement of my soldiers on the map based on that will stat, because it's a fairly rare thing to have happen. But it's mostly determined by your rank. So more seasoned veterans are less likely to panic, whereas if you take a rookie into the field, you kind of have to assume that for at least one turn, they're going to freak out at some point.
Well, it's also your will stat is determined by how often the soldier's been injured.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so it goes, if your soldier is critically injured, that damages your will stat.
Oh, right. No, that's correct. Yeah, I remember seeing that. So, yeah, it goes up when you get promoted or as they get more seasoned, and it goes down if they're gravely wounded.
So, wait a minute. Is this the game systematizing PTSD?
Basically.
Yeah, kind of.
That's badass.
it's kind of crazy. Again, I would never, and maybe I'm just not good at the game enough to do it yet, I would never factor that into my decision making within a match. But it's just kind of this interesting thing that can cause chaos.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
So I think, Cole, you had a clue as to what I was playing over the last week. when I sent you a message and said, well, I don't know if this would be a spoiler or not. It might be a spoiler. So I won't say it. We'll keep it between you and me.
Okay.
I played the two DLCs for BioShock.
Uh-huh.
So I played them both in a day about on Saturday and did so literally good. Nothing else. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was fun. It was cool to see more of the game. It was cool to see them advance the storyline, since they had kind of, in a Breaking Bad-esque way, kind of written themselves into a corner. So it was nice to see how they got out of that.
Yeah.
So
my response to that thing that you sent over, like saying, like expressing delight at a reveal that was made, you know, relatively early on in the DLC, my response was, I'm astonished and envious of your ability to insulate yourself from basic facts about games.
Yeah, I'm really oblivious to a lot of things.
But you went into it so untainted that the basic premise of those DLCs
was unknown to me.
Like, right down to their setting, which is alluded to in the title.
Yep. That's fair.
You're so sweet.
wait. So can we do, like, off the record cast what the posts were?
Ben, can I say it? Because, like, it's literally, like, it's in the promotional art for it.
It's
a basic fact about the game.
when you use a rational mind, it is kind of hard to ignore that fact. Sure.
It's hard to ignore that Burial at Sea takes place in Rapture.
Oh, was that? Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ben. I know that you're very sensitive about spoilers. That is an executive-ass decision I'm going to have to make.
I wouldn't even qualify that as a spoiler.
Yeah. Burial at Sea takes place at sea.
Yeah.
I know. Who saw it coming, right? But, okay, that rationale aside, the way in which they revealed that, I thought was a surprise.
Uh-huh.
So I still stand by the fact that it was surprising, and I liked it. But,
I feel like, you know, in our duty as podcasters, trying to protect people from, you know, being ruined on reveals about stuff, If we're being held responsible for people being insulated from those facts about those games, I can't shoulder that burden, Ben. You can tilt at that windmill, but I cannot go with you on that journey.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Like I said, I admire your ability to do that.
But no, that's like saying, like, hey, spoiler, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is set in the Star Wars universe.
It's set in the Old Republic.
Yeah, like, okay, how old? Like, it's so many thousands of years before what you know in Star Wars that it might as well be its own IP, but there are lightsabers, I guess.
That Yoda was not even alive yet.
Yeah.
That's how old it was.
Two, like, which did you prefer? Because they are relatively different from each other.
Oh, very.
That's true. I would say the part two has a stronger storyline. Yes, that's all. I don't know. that's the biggest thing. I mean, cause that one was more in tune with, I think, the main game, as far as, like, pushing the envelope of the narrative and challenging you to think about what's going on, to try and figure out all the puzzles of, or I guess all the pieces of, what's going on, I guess.
Yeah.
There was one part that was kind of like a gross out moment towards the end of the second one. I don't want to go beyond that.
Which is crazy.
Was it similar to the picture you posted earlier?
Yeah, just a few inches off.
Yeah. So I barely remember anything because it was such a long recording session. But I don't think we commented on that scene in the bonus level about that. Which
pretty
is like,
out of place, I feel like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it does a great job at doing what it's trying to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised by that scene, I guess.
Yeah.
Even knowing who he is and what he's capable of?
See,
I guess so, yeah.
To me, it almost seemed out of character for him, simply because he... It seemed like they wanted at least to make him transfer over to, like, you know, mustache twirling evil. Like, you know, it just seemed like just very arbitrary and vindictive.
So now we are encroaching on spoiler territory.
Yeah. So let's back. Let's would you kindly back away? remember that thing from that game we played once?
Did you do any of the Clash of Clouds?
I have not done that yet. So, okay.
Being the first person shooter savant that you are, I will be interested to see what you think of it.
Okay. Yes, that is on my to-do list, as well as Dark Souls now that Cole has started The Wire. So
I tell you, man, I'm in it.
I know.
And what's crazy is, like, over the course of 5 seasons at, you know, 13 episodes per season, I will probably put more hours into The Wire than you will put into Dark Souls for its playthrough. Yeah.
Perhaps.
Roughly equivalent. Yes, I would say roughly equivalent.
Yeah.
Huh. Tip for tat.
Yeah.
Neat.
So BioShock, it's worth playing. The second one was definitely better as far as giving you something to think about.
The second DLC.
Yeah, the second. Yeah, part two of the DLC. The first one ended quite abruptly, in my opinion, I guess. I did not see that coming. But
What did you think of the story overall?
It was fine. It was fine, and it gave me something to think about as far as the second one goes.
Do you feel like it gave you satisfactory closure?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I continue as the only one who thought it was great.
No, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I don't know. I mean, people throw around the word hero too much these days. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one way you could do it.
Yeah.
Oh. Is that all, Ben?
That was all that I've played, yes.
Cool.
So, Cole, what have you been up to?
Man, I don't know. You? No. today was a big day for games, and then I got this new audio interface, and then that took up my evening getting it set up.
Have you not played the Dark Souls DLC?
I have not played the new Dark Souls DLC.
You son of a bitch! What are you doing here?
what is your life? What's your life like, Cole? Yeah,
I am amazed.
Yeah,
that is. Wow. Well, okay.
You know what? I saw what would do the most good for the network in the near term. And I was like, I've got this new toy. You know, our listeners paid for it. I'm going to get it set up as soon as possible so they can enjoy the fruits of their generosity. Okay. So
yeah, no, that holds.
Okay. Cool. As long as I'm above reproach. I totally intended to at least dip my toe in. I've heard a lot of good things. People are raving about it on the Facebook page for Bonfireside Chat. Like, I've got it downloaded, preloaded, any every kind of loaded you can do with it. But eventually, I'd like to try and do it all in one sitting, and it just ended up being impossible. There's that, and then there's also the episode 4 of the second season of The Walking Dead came out today as well, I believe. And I'm excited to jump into that, although it's not been reviewing very well. But that, doesn't matter. I'm going to finish out that story regardless, so womp womp. Yeah, so down to things that I have been playing over the past, like, week or so. I've been dealing with a lot of, like, network stuff, trying to migrate. What's that? Did you shush me?
I heard it. It was not me.
Somebody should. Which one? Y'all dead motherfuckers. Shush me. Okay. No. I've been dealing with a bunch of network and work horseshit. So not a lot of time. Shovel Knight continues to be amazing. It is delightful. It's kind of settled down into being less a game that I pursue, you know, to play at long stretches at a gasp. But more like, okay, I have, you know, a half hour to 45 minutes to sit down and make a go at a level, right? And it's neat because it hasn't stopped showing me new things. And in a Mega Man-like fashion, it is, each stage is different and kind of has a different little twist to it. And, you know, not negligibly important, It has a different visual presentation as well. So different enemies, different little platforming hooks that all kind of like rope you in. So I continue to give that my highest endorsement. We'll see if it has legs through to the end, you know, if it continues showing us new things. But it's great.
Do you find the time that you're spending on it versus, you know, short chunks versus long swaths changes your experience? Like, are you more or less dialed into those changes by area if you're only experiencing one at a time?
I feel like it's more heightened. Like, you know, I think that if I played them, you know, butt to gut, like if I went from one to the next, I would probably see more similarities. But putting a little bit of distance in between and putting a little bit of breathing room in, kind of feels like it is giving it that distance over time to appreciate it. You know, you're walking into it. You know, there's downside to it. Like, it is a difficult game, and the platforming really, really ramps up. Like, once you get past the second, like, hub village, and you lose a little bit of that, like, you know, as you keeping that knife sharp from, you know, from play session to play session is pretty difficult.
Shovel sharp.
Yes, there we go. yes, thank you for correcting me on that. Yeah, you know, it's so hard to stay honest these days, but good friends like you. So I would say I would prefer doing it this way, honestly, because it is a difficult game, and I'm not under any gun to get it done. So I'm just going to play it when I feel like playing it.
Nice.
Yeah. So do you destroy the checkpoints?
No, I'm nowhere near confident enough. Although it would be neat because I think you can dip back into old stages. So like you can do a challenge run on a stage and just, you know, destroy them as you go along to try and get coins. But eventually, from what I hear from other places, currency ceases to be like functional. Like it is, It is balanced in such a way that you don't have to do that to get ahead. Like grinding doesn't make any sense because eventually you run out of stuff to buy. So that would be like a desperate last measure thing, or just something I would do for fun to see if I could, you know?
So if you destroy a checkpoint and then in another playthrough go back, do you know, does it come back?
I have literally like no idea, David.
Yeah.
Yeah. No clue.
Can we
sorry
shut that conversation down?
I didn't mean to. I was trying to think of a way out of it, but you know, time makes fools of us all. Yeah, it's still great. I wish it was on Maxim where people could play it, specifically Dennis. I wish it was on Max so Dennis could play it, but, man, that seems like a logical game to go on to Vita, actually.
Really?
But I don't think it is. Well, I mean, think about it. Like, you know, like platformers do really well in Vita, specifically platformers of that kind of indie stripe. But I just don't think it's out on that, which is weird because I know that it's out on 3DS. So.
No, you never know. I'll keep my eye out.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So if pattern holds, it will be released on PSN, let's say in September. And then by the second week of September, it'll be free on PSN Plus. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And like literally, this is not an exaggeration, I check daily to see when the Mac release date is posted.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's nice to keep hope alive. Yeah.
Kindle that bonfire.
Definitely.
Cash that checkpoint.
Yeah. The only other thing I've been checking out is a game called Probability Zero.
I'm interested.
why is that particular set of syllables interesting to you, Ben?
I like probability.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, yeah, because of your profession and all.
And that's at one end of the spectrum of probability.
Plumbing the extremes. Yes. So what this is, I think it was originally like a Flash game or something. Like it plays like one of those. But it is a roguelike platformer that scrolls downward, if that makes any sense. So it's got a very simple visual presentation. It's pixelated, again, kind of has that Atari-esque aesthetic. It's a little dark for my taste. Like it's kind of monochromey in a way that doesn't look that great, almost to the point of being detrimental to playability because you're trying to avoid these enemies. But the hook is, you know, you're trying to descend as far as possible, and it's kind of neat because easy mode is, I think the distinction is, easy mode is how many enemies can you kill, whereas hard mode is how far can you go down. So you have two things that are, you know, kind of fighting against you, which is if you fall off the top of the screen, you die. And if you fall off the bottom of the screen, you die. And if you fall too far, you also take damage. And you have very limited attacks, but like a Binding of Isaac or like any other kind of role playing or roguelike kind of game in this vein, you know, it has an emphasis on as you go, you collect new skills and new things that you can do. And you have like a loadout that you can build. So as you uncover these new perks, it's like, do you want to be able to attack downward or to attack to the right? Well, you can only pick one, but you're kind of building to your play style. As to what you can affect, or like, you know, do you want to increase the effective distance at which you can fall?
This looks like Endgame. Have you ever played that?
No, I have not.
Okay, it's got a very kind of minimalist. The presentation at least looks very much like Endgame.
Is that like a like what is that for?
It's I think it started as a Flash game. It's for Ninja, and you have kind of a little sprite that is incredibly agile. And you kind of have to go around and you hit switches to open a door. And there are tons of different traps and enemies working against you.
Are you talking about N Plus, like the game that became N?
Yeah, so N.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah. It sounded like you said End Game.
Oh, no. N, yeah. I know it as End Game, which okay. I think was the name of the original Flash one. You're right. Yeah. It is just N Plus now.
I am intimately familiar with N.
So okay, yeah. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Am I on point? It is just a visual thing.
I mean, visual thing. Like it's, I would say it's a lot less fluid than N is. It's a little bit more methodical, mm-hmm. to what it expects you to do. Just because it is less about like, hey, can you do this amazing acrobatic feat and avoid all these enemies, and more, can you deal with these threats while proceeding at the pace that is dictated to you by the game?
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's neat. It's like, you know, $5 on Steam. I picked it up because of it was a video games hot dog assignment recently. And I don't know that I have any further insight to add to it other than to say like this, you know, the different twists on this genre, specifically like this procedurally generated kind of platformer kind of thing are intriguing to me. Although I definitely, you know, personally run up against my own kind of limitations in terms of like dexterity and timing. to wit, I am terrible at these kinds of games, and I'm more kind of like curious about them from a systemic approach than I am kind of like enthused to like dive into them and get better, because I know it's such a long road to hoe.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's about it.
So it looks like we'll both be playing Dark Souls next week.
Pretty much, yeah. No, I got all prepped. It's, you know, it's kind of neat because I was just over the course of this past weekend getting ready for the episode we're recording this week, and just working on my build. And I re-defeated a boss, because that's something you can do in Dark Souls 2. A boss in a particular area. I don't want to spoil where you find this DLC, like the entrance to it at. And I went into the room beyond him to warp back, and it was entirely different. And apparently, in anticipation of this DLC coming out, they just patched the game, and instead of being a big featureless room with a bonfire in it, it is now like the mouth to this entirely new world.
Whoa, House nice. Of Leaves.
Yeah, like it kind of unsettled me, because
it wasn't just a bonfire aesthetic thing or a New Game Plus thing. This is like they patched it to be that way.
Yeah, they patched it to be that way. And it was, huh. You know, it was kind of weird, because you walk up to the door to go into the area itself, and then just it gives you like the, you know, you are not kingly message, except it just flashes the word closed on the screen like it's the fucking Quickie Mart.
So, there's a little clock next to the door that has the hand set for like 3 hours from now.
We'll be back. Yeah. On break, we'll be back in this. But I mean, like, you're kind of right, David, because, you know, after a certain point, your familiarity of these areas becomes a real asset to you. And so when that's subverted, and it's something they do, you know, pretty interestingly in Dark Souls 2 with the New Game Plus, by changing things up that way, it was unsettling, and I immediately jumped to Facebook to say, hey guys, this might be something worth checking out, because you probably wouldn't be in this place otherwise. I just happened to be going after a very particular weapon. Yeah.
So a quick question for you, Cole. I, on my main character that I've beat the game with, I've been holding off going into New Game Plus with the aspiration of, excuse me, beating the Dark Lurker and doing the whole Dark Diver Covenant. Is it worth me staying on the first game to do that, or should I just go in a new game plus to enjoy all that and do the Dark Lurker stuff on my own time?
I think so. I think it'd be worth holding off if you can. I mean, you can mm-hmm. probably just roll up another character if you wanna continue with something else. But like, I know for me personally, I would rather see all of these. I'd rather see all of this DLC in just regular new game, and then also do it again in new game plus to see if they change anything in between them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that and just, I don't know, like I'd rather play it at the regular balanced difficulty. You know,
so wait, as a vote for or against new game plus?
As a vote against new game plus.
Okay,
but
it sounded like you were saying it was the DLC, right?
No, I'm talking about doing a specific covenant. And whether or not it's better to go to New Game Plus and kind of enjoy all the differences there and just say, like, if I want to go, this speaks to Dark Souls. I'm terrified that if I go to New Game Plus, all of the Dark Diver Covenant stuff will be way too hard for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I would say just pursue Dark Diver stuff in the meantime while you're waiting for the new DLC and then move on to New Game Plus when you're good and ready for it.
Oh, okay.
Like,
cool.
see as much as you can on just regular new game, because okay. you know, to a certain extent, I feel that like that they're going to balance for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because the enemy difficulty scales disproportionately with your increase in stats or with your ability, and just mm-hmm. you know that like if you know why would you opt into something that is more frustrating than it probably already will be, you know?
Yeah. Yay, Dark Diver. Okay, no, that's yeah. helpful.
Cool.
Have they price dropped Dark Souls 2 yet?
And maybe it was on sale at some point during the Steam.
It definitely was on sale on Steam because yeah. that was what I was watching for.
There was a launch sale for it on a website called Green Man Gaming or something like that. That's how I got it for PC for like $35, like the day that it launched. So I would recommend if you keep an eye out because there are like third party sites that will sell you Steam games or games that come with a Steam okay. code, which you can redeem. And then it's just like, oh, I just own this on Steam now. So that might be a viable way to go after it.
Yeah, I'm keep hoping that it'll PlayStation Plus, but I think they've pretty much given up on the PlayStation 3 for that.
Mm. I don't know. It'll be, regardless, because the DLC is coming out, it may be a while before they dump it on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, agree.
Yeah. Guys, it is almost 12, so why don't we butter it up? Cool,
yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah, this is a good episode.
The credit. So that was level number 69, and I feel so proud of my restraint.
No, we did it, guy. We got through an entire episode.
High five. Yeah, so thank you so much for listening.
The lonely high five to oneself.
Yeah. I do that a lot on network shows.
What's funny is there was a bell ring in there too. It sounded like that.
Yeah,
was a
yeah.
Multi-layered.
It was a Radio Lab esque soundscape that I was creating. Yeah. So if you liked the audio quality on this episode, Skype issues aside, you can thank yourselves because Patreon money bought this. Yeah, so this is, we're improving the infrastructure at the network, and yeah, we're very grateful for that. If you want to check out what you can get by donating to us every month on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. More specifically to this show, we have that Facebook group where conversation is on and popping. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, specifically on Tuesday afternoons. Usually those the multiplayer prompts go up there. Also, you know what? It can never hurt to leave us a rating or review on iTunes and tell a friend if you know somebody who likes video games, which being a video games person, you probably do. Word of mouth is the way that we grow. Specifically these shows that don't have a particular Dark Souls-esque theme. Yeah. Did I miss anything, guys?
Yeah, you did.
Secret
oh,
you
stuff
did
at the end of the episode.
What for the loyal listeners?
For the loyal, yeah. If
Dennis,
you're still listening,
are we
God
going
bless
to reward
you.
Them?
We are absolutely going to reward you. So I'm a purist, and I know there are more people like me out there who just, you feel wrong unless you listen through all the admin at the end of shows every single time. So if that's you and you're still listening, we have a special reward for you. So first off, if you own a PS3, I have two codes for you. The first is for a two-week trial of PlayStation Plus. It only works if you have never had PlayStation Plus before. But if you kind of want to dip your toe in, enter the code 8J72J5ND7JG2. So that is for a free 14-day trial of PlayStation Plus. And I think Batman Arkham City is available there. So if you're looking to get that game for free, you know, that's perfect excuse.
You could do a lot worse.
Yeah,
good
for
luck
sure.
Beating it in 2 weeks.
And then another treat is I want to give you $5 to spend on PSN. So if you enter the code ER9RJ7NHEKQG, that is a $5 voucher to spend on whatever you like. So go race, fly, you fools, and enter those, and enjoy. And yeah, you know, if you get the $5 code, let us know what you spent it on and whether or not you were happy with it.
Yeah.
Then the other thing, if you own a Wii U, so this just keeps on going. If you own a Wii U, I'm trying to think what the phrase should be. Say X is the worst game ever on our Facebook page, and X, 4X, use either Pikmin 3, The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD, Wii Party, if you hate yourself, or New Super Mario Bros. U. So tell us that one of those games is the worst game ever, and we will get you a code for that game.
Yeah. that is a tremendous value. That is a $50 value.
Yeah.
So what I will say, that is contingent upon you actually owning a Wii U.
Yes, that is continued on you owning a Wii U, and I think the promotion ends on August 31st.
Yeah.
So
don't fake the funk on the nasty dunk. If you don't have a Wii U, let somebody who does own a Wii U take that.
Agree. Yeah. So, like I said, Pikmin 3, The Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker HD, Wii Party, though I strongly recommend against that one, or...
We can't say this enough.
Yeah. New Super Mario Bros. U. So, go to our Facebook page, just say whatever one of those games you want is the worst game ever, and we will get you a code for it.
Yeah, and if you say, like, Zelda or Super, like, any of those, somebody's going to say, like, dude, why are you hating? Like, why are you hating in an unprovoked fashion? And you know what? Unless they listen, nobody will be the wiser, but you will be sitting there with a shiny free game.
Mm-hmm.
So can the title be Wii Party is the worst game ever?
I've already picked the title. Right. I got us covered.
Lay down some knowledge on us.
With? Oh, well, I mean, there are procedures, people.
Proceed.
Okay.
This is a podcast, not Nob. There are rules.
Thank you. Man, a Big Lebowski Telltale game? That is an investigation, you know?
Yep.
Oh, man, that's...
What about a Big Lebowski LA Noir game?
Yeah. No, a Fargo LA Noir game.
Ooh.
Yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm-hmm. Yep, so I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been Dave Mysmith, at Mysmith777.
And since David didn't say it, I'll say I've been and continue being Ben Merkel, at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yes, and until next time, remember... David is Legion. Can you hear
Ben?
Me?
Hello. Oh, yep.
There we go. Okay, cool. Yeah.
That's right. You were making a sandwich, Ben.
Yeah.
I was.
Now you have a sandwich back.
I have a sandwich that did not exist before.
Mm-hmm.
I reversed entropy.
Yeah.
Sandwich ex nihilo.
You harnessed a sandwich from the multiverse. Yeah, man. So the wire.
Okay. So the first scene of every season is a metaphor for the season, in case you haven't heard of that yet.
Okay, so I forget what the first season of what the first scene of season two was.
That one is McNulty getting bribed to let the people have a party.
Yeah,
and then just tow them around. Yeah. The first scene, that one's like not as strong as some of the other ones.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, just like the first scene of the season proper, or of the series proper, is amazing because it sets it up so well. Like, it's America. Yeah. You have to let them play. Because, I mean, at least, I mean, so far, a theme through both seasons has been it's the game. You know?
Yeah. It doesn't matter if the game's rigged. It doesn't matter if you're setting up a system where somebody is going to be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everybody has to get a chance because it's America. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and that scene where D'Angelo, you know, explains the rules of chess, you know, to those kids in the pit, like you couldn't have a stronger thesis for the series than that.
Yeah.
You know, so far, right?
Yeah. Where are you at right now?
I am on the next to last episode of season two. So Ziggy just got popped.
Okay.
He basically lost his mind and opened fire on the Greeks, and turned himself in. And there's been a raid on Sabaka's like union operation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everything's cleaned out.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So then. Yeah. So you've seen D'Angelo and you've seen Wallace be pawns in the game, essentially.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Yeah,
or go from, I mean, like D'Angelo, he was like middle, you know, he was middle management, which is what's amazing about his thing, you know, about his role in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was essentially demoted in the first episode.
Yeah, to taken from the high rises to the pit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And and the first episode, there's a nice like juxtaposition between Rawls yelling at McNulty, and then like the adjacent scene to that is Avon yelling at D'Angelo, essentially for being irresponsible. But oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say I really liked D'Angelo's character. I mean, I was, you know, I thought he got like a fitting end, like his, you know, you can always tell when it's somebody's last episode or when they're trying to build to like, oh, that person's going to die. Like
they wax intellectual on the Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, the whole past is prologue thing. Like you can't leave behind what you are. And even though he's trying to do this reinvention, it's like, you know, there's going to be somebody sneaking up on you, you know, if you've lived this, you know, like you know, Stringer Bell is a really dangerous person, you know, and he doesn't feel the loyalty to D'Angelo that family would provide. You know, Avon would have let him live, but, you know, Stringer has his own motivation, right?
His own game that he's playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one quote by David Simon where he's talking about how just like a little bit of knowledge is a really dangerous thing. And in Stringer's case of like knowing a few classes about business and then trying to apply to the drug game.
Like, well, that's what's hilarious, because like you see him in these classes, like, you know, learning about supply and demand, and it's him giving the same lecture to his lieutenants a little bit later on. You know, it's like just what is that, the Dunning-Kruger effect? That's such a, like, you know, that's such a,
where smart people perceive to be dumber than they are, and dumb people perceive to be smarter than they are.
We're just where dumb people think they're smarter than they are.
So something like that,
or like they're, you know, there's a certain level, like, you know, like mastery, right? Like there's such a thing as like an advanced beginner, where somebody you know, like true, that like the true path to mastery is recognizing that you know, you know there's stuff that you don't know, whereas like an advanced beginner thinks that they know more than they actually do. You know,
because you don't know what you don't know. So one of the great things about The Wire, though, is like how they will build season-long conflicts, you know. Because, like, you can't beat, like, the sort of suspense or anticipation that you have in the last few episodes of a season. Because, you know, like, everything is building up to that point, you know? And so, like, with the case of, like, season two, the setting off point is Ziggy killing the Greeks, you know? Where it's, like, that's the thing that triggers the mousetrap, essentially. And with season one, how it's like the Barksdale gang realizing that the cops are on them and that they need to like close up shop or like cut loose ends. And then, you know, it's so great to see that sort of smash and grab competition to like cover bases versus trying to save people and stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean, and just in both cases that I've noticed so far, you know, like I said, in the main body of the episode, like, so much of this seems to be about like the dehumanizing nature of being made into a proxy, you know, for somebody else's fight. And the thing that ends up bringing down, you know, Barksdale's operation and then also kind of the union operation is somebody who, you know, is part of the, you know, is part of the game, is a proxy for somebody else, but snaps and breaks out of it in a way that is unpredictable and does something that is seemingly unrelated, but kind of catalyzes the entire thing.
Okay, so who would you say does that in the first season?
I forget. There was a very specific violent incident in season one, but I forget the exact names of the people who were involved. I want to say it was Wallace dying, like Wallace's murder. Like it was related to some of those. Like it was in there. Like, or it was the thing that led into Wallace's murder, which is there was an instigating incident of trying to kill people to cover it up,
right? Yeah, I think Brandon was the name of Omar's boyfriend.
Yeah,
who gets killed?
And, you know, and there's been a lot said about how great Omar's character is, but his scene in season two when he's testifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking
it's
to
ridiculous.
Well, it's like that lawyer, that scummy lawyer Lebby. Saying, coming out and saying, you know, like, you're out there profiting off of this, you know, horrible conflict that is sapping the will of our community. It's like, is that any different from what you're doing?
Exactly.
And then look that the judge gives him, like, he's got a point.
Yeah. I got the shotgun. You got the briefcase. Yeah.
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 Oh, man. I'm kind of curious to see. Go ahead.
The way that he wears the tie in the courtroom,
yeah, like just draped over his shoulders.
Yeah. His name's Mars, not Aries. Same dude, different name.
Yeah. Like, and again, like that feeds into it as well. Like, so, like, so much of it. I don't know. Like, I love shows that reward you. You know, that reward you paying attention like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of seeing, you know, because like a big thing about at least with the Barksdale crew is that, you know, notion of changing the name, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so same guy, different. Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of that different stuff. I'm surprised at like which characters I start finding, because like I started out hating Przybylowski.
Yeah,
because again, they don't make any overture to making him likable. Like he blinds a kid, you know,
and misfires a gun in the office.
Yeah. Like he's like, oh, this is like a real jerk, but he turns out to be like a real whiz kid. Like, you know, it's almost like a Walt and Jesse relationship between him and what's his name, Freeman.
Daniels, maybe. Freeman. Yeah, him and Freeman.
You know, just like, oh, like the, like there is such a thing as like natural police. And, you know, at the very least, him trying to recreate and recapture that magic of the major crimes unit in season two, you know, that's really charming, you know?
Yeah. And there's such a payoff at the end of season one, too, where it's like the last episode where they try and close up the major crimes division. They're like, OK, you can keep Freeman and Przybylowski as a way to try and screw them over. And it's like those are the two huge people who have like come such a long way.
And for Freeman as well, like he's I like the role that he serves on the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What's her name in season two? Russell.
Oh yeah, BD Russell.
Yeah. Does she stick around, or is she just a season two fixture?
You'll have to keep watching to find out.
Okay.
This is what I do with all my coworkers. Is like, someone will be like, say something, and then kind of like look towards me, and I just have my stare into space stare down. So it's just like, it's got my poker face.
It's the ride, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. So I'm good.
It only gets better. Like season 3, 4, and 5 are all really good.
What is it? So season 3 is City Hall.
So season three is about, is it possible to reform an institution? So okay. like one of the themes is like the effect of an institution on a person and the effect of a person on an institution.
Okay.
And kind of how that works. And so like, so one of the things is talking about like how metrics and like, so like with the homicide division, mm-hmm. how when you get to the point where there's, you know, 300, 400 murders a year in the city, you can no longer be personal with each one. They are now index cards. These murders are, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. and you go by the metrics where, you know, like where clearance rate is the only way you can gauge how well you're doing, like not by looking at the actual quality of the detective work, but just by clearance rate, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's a, that's a big sticking point in season two, right? Like the, like a lot of the institutional shuffling around, you know, like
okay.
we have these, you know, 14 whodunits. And whoever mm-hmm. that lands on, whether it's homicide, whether it's, you know, county police, nobody wants that because, you know, if these are to be classified as murders, there's almost no way that they can solve it. And thus, whoever it lands on is going to have a black eye, right?
Take a hit. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is that further explored? Because that seems like a really fucked up part of their system and it causes a lot of the undue stress.
Yeah. You know? No, it's totally elaborated on. Yeah. I mean, that's... Sweet. That's like, yeah, it's elaborated on in that respect, and it's also shown in other institutions as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, yeah, and yeah, that was such a brilliant piece of writing, though. As far as like McNulty looking up the drift charts and like proving that it should be Baltimore City Police responsibility, it's like it's the perfect asshole, you know?
Yeah, trying to fuck over what's his name,
Rawls.
Yeah, trying to fuck over Rawls, but instead yeah. it lands on Bunk and Freeman.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
yeah,
and yeah, Bunk is such a great character as yeah. well, man. Like,
man, just the scenes with them just like drinking in the train yard.
Like, yeah,
I've never seen such a depiction of just like leaning into it alcoholism in television like that.
Like, yeah, how honest it is. Yeah,
yeah,
and yeah, and that's one of the things he talks about is like both, you know, people in the newspaper, which is where David Simon was originally was, and then also people in the Baltimore police just closing down bars consistently.
Yeah,
and like how unhealthy that is, but just honestly looking at it. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah,
just like, yeah. And I enjoy that because, you know, it's about the war on drugs, you know, like the series is, at least, you know,
the first season is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, isn't like, yeah. like broadly, like, you know, season two so far has also been about like smuggling and, you know, like it gets a little bit hairier because of the ports and what does it have to do with national security? Like it kind of seems to be perched at a time and a place where the war on drugs and the war on terror kind of like intersect and fuck with people like who are down there on the ground and just like these broader political tides that they're beholden to. Right.
Yeah. So what I've heard also is apparently season two is supposed to be about businesses
yeah.
and like the dock workers supposed to be a metaphor for like CEOs of a company sort of thing, like Sabaka's character.
Yeah.
But I think one of the reasons why season two is kind of hard or why people might not like it is like, I think a lot of the, if that is the intended metaphor, mm-hmm. I think a lot of that's kind of hard to land, or like a lot of it doesn't necessarily come through, mm-hmm. but it is well depicted though. And like, well researched, because like all the stuff that they do is like pretty accurately depicted to yeah. what actual dock workers do.
Yeah. And like, I'm interested in it mostly. I mean, there are a lot of things that are interesting about it. I'm actually learning about like dock working and unions. Like it's educational in a very strange and kind of satisfying way.
Yeah, they're just so good at blending information with actual like narrative and entertainment, sort of, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, they yep. do a great job of having both of those come through at the same time.
Yeah, it's just a world that I don't have any real insight into, you know, either mm-hmm. through personal experience or, you know, any kind of media. Really, okay. And it was hard to bounce. And, you know, like I kind of bounced off of it initially, you know, because of the, you know, it seemed like a very pale, pardon the pun, in that it seemed like a pale substitute for Barksdale's gang, which I really grew to like. In mm-hmm. fact, like what was great, you know, like in the beginning of season one, the reason why I bounced off of that so many times is because the police side seemed like such a mess. Like before they got organized under one banner of like, okay, here are the players that I need to be concerned about on the police side, and here's their main thrust and their goal. Like for those first couple of episodes, it's flashing from character to character and unit to unit in a way that doesn't seem unified and kind of like, okay, like what's the scope of this? Whereas Barksdale's organization, like once you it's easier to understand, and it's almost easier to empathize with that.
Okay.
To me, to a certain extent, and so that was one thing that, you know, it had, like it started at a higher place and only, you know, moved to improve from there, right? Mm-hmm. So the dock workers didn't have that advantage working for them. And, you know, the Nick and Ziggy, you know, side story or subplot or kernel plot in that is pretty interesting. I like Ziggy's character a lot, you know, just because he is, you know, small time and wants to be big time.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do so much to make him unlikable in some sense, but then empathetic in other senses, you know, like the scene of him like burning money or like spending money after they're like, hey, don't show this to anyone.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you dumb son of a bitch. But then there's like a slightly deeper core to that where he's just been kind of emotionally abused his entire life. And it's just,
you know, I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it's fun to watch a fuck up, you know?
Yeah. I know one of the goals, speaking to like the part of the police being kind of staggered and unorganized in the first season at the beginning, is like one of their goals was that they didn't want it to be like a typical detective show where it's like you go to this person, find out this piece of information, then you go to this person, find out this piece of information, and then you break the case, but rather having like an abundance of information and then trying to have to sift through that to try and figure out what's going on. And they wanted to present like that instead.
Yeah.
Like, so instead of like pulling a thread, it's more of like trying to clear off the debris sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like eventually like the politics of that became interesting. Once I figured again, who the players were. And it's weird because it's almost a little bit simpler in season two, where like it lays it right on the line that the only reason this investigation exists is because of this feud that what's his name, the Polish police guy, has. I mean, just like it's such a petty thing that launches everything else, like these concurrent and seemingly unrelated events of they outbid us on the stained glass window at a church and there's a body dredged up in the harbor.
Yeah. So now I'm going to fuck these guys over, you know?
Yeah.
What's his name? Valchek.
Yeah. Valchek. There we go. Yeah.
Valchek is such a beautiful character too, man. Like, so many perfect assholes in that show. It's
just like, So here's my question, because I need to go to bed here real quick.
Okay.
Did you have to watch with the subtitles on? Because I find that for everybody, like, you know, I've heard like, oh, watch it with the subtitles because the Barksdale gang is kind of hard to understand. Actually, I didn't have any trouble understanding them. You know, I didn't have more trouble understanding them compared to everybody else because the dialogue is so naturally delivered that it actually almost a lot of the times comes out in a mumble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
Sorry, go ahead.
I just watching it with subtitles, and it's nice because the Amazon Instant app or whatever gives you that option, like right away, to put that up there. That was also kind of like a key for me being able to like really dive into it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I watched with subtitles the first time, but I can't recall. One thing it does really strongly, though, it does the way they do sound in the show is pretty awesome. There's only like a few, like one to two times every season where they do a montage that has music over it, but they never like, they seldom do like slow motion or any sort of editing effects. You know, they try and be very accurate and true to life with with how they depict what goes on. So if someone gets killed or something like that, there's more conventions in the first season than there is in any of the following seasons. So
what do you mean by more conventions? Like more like tricks or?
In the first episode, there's a flashback to the guy who testified and who got killed.
Yeah.
And that's something David Simon didn't want to put in, but they asked him to put in just because they didn't think people would follow it.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped doing that, you know, like season three and on, where it's like, they just expect the viewer to figure it out, you know, or just pay attention.
And so
they stopped doing stuff like that. Also, there's a scene in the first season where it's like a slow motion scene when Avon comes to the pit. And like there's like music playing and stuff. They don't do that season three and beyond either, where there's no sort of editing effects like that.
It's
all realistic.
It's so pretty modest and sparse. I've noticed, like, my closest touch point for like this quality of television is Breaking Bad, but like Breaking Bad is all about the Dutch angle. It's all about the snappy montage, and it's all about the let's put this camera in a place that's unexpected, right?
Yeah, this is kind of the opposite of that.
It's almost like in a lot of instances, it's staged like a play. Like it's a lot of very simple shots. There's not like a lot of depth to it. There's artistry to it, but like there's very little flash in terms of like we're just going to have like three or four people on screen and we're going to do like over the shoulder cuts.
They seldom do camera trickery. The one instance that I can think of is the same scene where D'Angelo dies, when they do a pull away from Avon. Like, that's one of the few times that they do, like, an actual effect with the camera, you know, or, you know, but, you know, it's very effective there. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the few times that they don't shoot it almost like a documentary slash play, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm hooked. I'm in love.
Keep watching. Season three is really good. I didn't appreciate that the first time I think I watched it. I appreciate it much more when I watched it with my coworkers like this last few months. Season four is really good. Season five is really good. So
okay, cool. I've heard, with any show where the reputation precedes it, there are people who say like, oh, this season isn't any good. And like a common thing that I've heard said is like, oh, The Wire only has four seasons. But I've never heard anybody agree on like which one is the weakest though, or like which one is I disown you.
So a lot of people say that it should have ended with a fourth season, but even after watching the fifth season now, the fifth season's valid. It's I think it's bullshit for people to say that. I think the only reason why someone would say that is if they are watching it completely at surface level and not thinking about what they're trying to say with it.
What is it? Season five is the one that that looks into, the paper.
Okay, so I'll say the themes since the themes don't really spoil anything.
Yes.
Okay, the theme of season three is whether or not you can reform an institution. Whether you can change the way things are done. Season four is kind of two things. It's where all the people that you've seen come from, so how they get to the position that they're in, and also the education system, both in Baltimore and kind of overall in the United States, kind of how that works as an institution. The fifth one is it centers on the newspaper, but the themes of it are if enough people believe something is true, does it matter whether or not it's true or not?
Okay.
And I forget what the second theme is. But yeah, that's one of the big themes of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm actually going to go. I think I'm going to close out season two tonight as I fall asleep. Nice. So, yeah.
All right, man.
Cool. All right. Take it easy.
All right. Have a good one. See you
later. Bye.